Look, I know there seems to be no end to the plastic surgery that people will get to change every single aspect of their bodies. They get their ears done and their nose done and their chin done and their boobs done and their butt done and their ankles done. This is a new one to me. When I saw this in the New York Times over the weekend, I couldn't believe that there is such thing for reals as a beard transplant.
The story is about Jose Armos, who is a paramedic, and he would show up and people would say that he looked way too young. They were afraid to let this kid work on them, and he had just a weak beard. So he went to a plastic surgeon, and he had hair removed from his head and put on his chin. And this costs $7,000.
Wow.
There's a doctor quoted in the article who's in Miami. His name is Dr. Jeffrey Epstein. He says that he used to perform 4 or 5 facial hair transplants a year a decade ago. Now he says the average is 3 a week. So it is a hot trend. And this is the thing. I mean, something gets hot and everybody goes out and does it, and then it's not going to be hot anymore, and then nobody will do it anymore. It's like fashion trends. It's almost impossible to keep up with what's in, what's current right now. It's like the man bun. For like 90 seconds, the man bun was considered acceptable. And then as a society, we moved on and we said no longer to the man bun.
I think
that's
the
over.
End of the man bun was the Donald Trump picture.
Pretty much you could be right.
That's ruined it
so,
for everybody.
We wanted to find out more about the beard transplant and also just how it's possible for a person who's trying to live his life to keep up with all the trends, to be on the cutting edge of what's hip. So we asked Dave, who can you find us who knows all? And he has an expert for us, a designer and fashion expert named Emile La St. Croix, who joins us on the Kevin Bean Show right now. Welcome, Mr. La St. Croix. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
I doubt it.
We appreciate you joining us. We understand you're very busy. You're working at the L.A. Fashion Week right now?
Yes, it's L.A. Fashion Week, and everyone here is fabulous. And we are working very hard preparing to show the world all the new things for everyone to do and wear and see and be.
Okay. Well, as I was saying before we brought you on, sirs, it's complicated for regular schmoes like us to know what's in and what's out.
Mm-hmm. I've seen your photographs. Yes, it is complicated for
yeah.
you, but not for me, because I am a trendsetter, and I'm also a fashion expert on all things that are hip and cool.
Okay, how about the beard transplant? We're a little surprised by this.
Yes, everyone must have beard this week. Everyone must have one. It is the hottest fashion accessory you grow from your face.
Well, you just said this week, so what about next week?
Clean shaven next week.
Clean shaven. Okay.
I'm looking at the schedule here. It's clean shaven next week.
Oh, you have a schedule, so you know trends how
and
far
the
in advance.
Week after next, just the Hitler mustache is coming back. Believe it or not.
Wow, well, that is a surprise, actually.
I'm
okay.
surprised as well. It's too colorful.
I can't imagine that somebody's going out and spend $7,000 just so they can be hip for a week with their beard, though.
It's a lot of pressure. You have to be always on top of the fashion, or else you look like cargo shorts and T-shirts, man.
Yeah, what's that,
that's
right?
That's what we're wearing right now, actually. So.
That makes if I had food in my stomach, I would vomit.
But you don't eat because eating is out, right?
No, eating is for fat people and Americans.
Okay. All right, Mr. La St. Croix, what else should we be aware of if we or our listeners would like to be hip and be trendy again?
In terms of your facial area.
Your face, right?
And all the fashionable things you're talking about with beards and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
Eye piercing is very popular this week.
You mean like the eyebrow?
No, your eyeball.
Eye piercing?
Eyeball.
Eyeball.
How could you pierce your eyeball?
Right? But it's so cool. You put a jeweled stud in your eye.
I don't think that's smart.
That sounds painful and dangerous.
Yes, both of those things are true. That's why it's so cool. And yes, there's blindness, but it's more fun to pay for fashion. If you're a coward, just get one eye done. And then just look at the other one. But be fashionable. Be fabulous.
Now, is that just for a week as well? Because it doesn't seem like it's worth it.
No,
to
that'd be a whole
yourself.
Month.
I see. Okay.
That's a commitment for fashion.
Right.
Okay. Let's make it. Let's have Beer Mug try all these things. So let's get his eyes pierced.
Also, very popular now, surgery-wise, is having your scrotum filled with gallons of saline solution.
Why would you want that?
To intentionally make your testicles huge?
Oh, yes. Inflate.
Why?
Because all the fashions, you know, we're going from the skinny pants another pants with the fluffy crotch. The fluffy crotch is the new look everyone will have. And you need to fill out the fluffy crotch with the big saline sack.
This seems like, again, dangerous and so much work. And why?
Because you want to slash when you walk. It's very fabulous.
Okay. Well, I didn't realize that could be fabulous. Okay.
In fashion, of course, the most popular things are nippleless shirts. Shirts with the nipples cut out.
Okay.
So you're just exposing your nipples?
Expose your nippleage.
Okay.
You free the nipple.
I'm not positive that we can pull that off.
You can pull it off.
Okay. All right.
If you give a purple nurple, you can pull it almost right off. It hurts.
Now, is that for both sexes or just men or just women?
Man, who wants to see girl nipples?
Me?
You are so ridiculous.
I thought finally there was a trend I could get behind here, but no.
Also very popular for men this week, throat belts.
Throat what?
Throat belts.
Belts?
Yes.
Belts?
Yes, yeah, it's a thin strap throat belt. You put it on your throat and you pull it tight.
Yeah, that's okay. Just asphyxiation.
Sure, yeah, but it looks fabulous.
Okay.
And also very popular, now everyone is wearing them. I see them everywhere, foot mittens.
Foot mittens?
Yeah.
Aren't those just socks?
It's like a piece of cloth you put over your foot before you put your shoe on.
Yeah, that's
a sock.
But again, that's
so
just
fabulous. A new invention, the foot mitten.
Right, but it's a sock, though. They've been around for hundreds of years.
No, socks you could buy like a dozen for a nickel.
Right.
Foot mittens, you have to pay like $100 for a foot mitten.
But it does the same thing as a sock.
But it's made from llama. Made from llama.
Oh,
one of my suppliers now.
Oh.
That's Dolly. That's the Dolly Llama.
Don't do it.
Nope.
Hello, Dolly.
Man.
Johnny Knoxville.
Yes, sir.
King of the Jackasses. Everybody's bad grandpa. Ian Studio with us here on the Kevin Amin Show. How are you, Johnny?
I'm delicious. How are you?
It's good to see you, man. You're so thin. What's going on? You're a little AIDS-y. What's happening?
I'm just...
Oh, my God.
Wow. You just looked so thin.
Wow.
Everything
wow.
All right?
I thought I'd been exercising, but apparently I look agey.
Well, just a little bit, not full blown.
I'm saying maybe.
Oh, my God. Cut his mic.
What's wow. Should we start again? Hey, yeah. Johnny Knoxville is here, everybody.
Been working
great
out.
To see you, Johnny. How are you, buddy? You look terrific. You've been working out?
Man, that is so sweet. Yes, I have.
You've never looked better.
Jeez.
Hey, we were excited to, first of all, thank you for coming in. It's great to see you again. We love you. We love having you on the show. We were so excited when we started seeing the trailers pop up for this Evel Knievel documentary. And it makes me sad that there may be listeners who to whom the name Evel Knievel doesn't even mean anything. And that's a tragedy. And that's why I'm glad this documentary is out. Why don't you start with point A on why they should know who Evel Knievel is?
Well, I mean, he was a living superhero to me, the greatest daredevil of all time. I mean, he's alone at the mountaintop. You know, we have Matt Hoffman and Travis Pastrana and Robbie Madison and all those guys, but there wouldn't be probably any of those guys without Evel Knievel. I mean, they'd still be in trouble doing something.
Sure.
He was like trouble wouldn't change.
Yeah.
He was like the first extreme athlete, right?
Yeah, no one was going for it like that. He was a motorcycle jumper. There wasn't motorcycle jumping before Evel Knievel came along. And he just went for it like nobody else. And he also, in the doc, you'll see what a P.T. Barnum-esque showman and salesman he was. Very smart man. And
how did he get into it, Johnny? Like, what were his beginnings that led him to that as a career path?
You could have made a whole documentary on Evel just before he turned 20, growing up in Butte, Montana, and like, you know, he had this racket with bars. You know, I'll protect your bar from being robbed if you pay me some money, but if you didn't pay,
he'd get it robbed.
Someone was going to rob his bar. There's a lot of safes cracked, a lot of stores broken into.
What? He's a thug.
Yeah. He's a total...
Total con man.
Yeah. Hustler. But he had guts like nobody else.
Well, that's the thing. My memory of him is that he had guts because he would try these things. But my memory is he never landed them. He would just wipe out.
Yeah.
He didn't put any work into landing them.
Well, he was... no.
That's my memory of it.
Well, first of all, the bikes he was jumping weren't made for jump. No one jumped bikes then, so they were like so much heavier and slower than today's bikes. They were like jumping a dump truck over those bikes. And also, he didn't have a speedometer. on his bike. Right. It was just he had a friend stand in front of the ramp, and if his friend thought he was going fast enough, he would give him a thumbs up. There's a lot, little bit of guesswork.
That's a jinky way to do that.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, so, and...
What if he didn't have enough speed? Did you do the wobbly hand of, oh, you're going all right, you might make it?
Well, if you didn't have enough speed, well, you're about to get some footage.
Ah.
You know, you have Caesar's Palace or... Wembley or some of the other jumps that he really crashed on.
Would we know him as well if he landed all of that?
Well, he
do you think the landings being complete disasters being shown over and over and over again was a big part of it?
Oh, Evil knew that people weren't showing up to watch him land it. And he was trying to land it, but when you're a gunfighter for a living, you know, it's a pretty tough gig. And especially when you don't have all the math worked out. And he didn't do practice jumps until later in his career.
There's no foam pit and all that stuff to practice on.
Yeah, because I've seen today's guys, they're trying to jump 300 feet. They'll go jump 100, then 110, 120, which is smart. And what they're doing is far from safe. But it's, you know... It's very technical, but Evo would just take a shot of wild turkey and say, you got to feel it.
Johnny, did you ever meet him? Did you know him at all?
Oh, I had an opportunity to meet Evo. Me and the guys were asked to present an award to Matt Hoffman for the ESPN Awards around 2000, 2001. And Evo was there that night, so we're very excited. He's our hero.
Like, of course.
In the 70s, there was no one bigger than Evo. It was like Elvis, Muhammad Ali, Evo, they're all equal. In America. And so we walk out on the stage to present to Matt Hoffman, but someone kicks Wee Man from behind. He goes sliding across the stage on his stomach. Pontius walks out on the stage wearing nothing but a thin little belt, doing a helicopter with his gym dog to the audience. And my friend Naratko is trying to puke on stage. And so we were asked to leave immediately afterwards, and they cut us out of the show. And I heard Evil wasn't very happy with how he acted.
Really?
And Matt Hoffman, who's friends with Evil and producer on Being Evil.
Wait, Evil was disappointed in you?
Absolutely. And Matt said that years afterwards, all the bad behavior on that stage he attributed to me. Like, I did the helicopter. I tried to puke on stage. And I kicked the little person. And my gym dog's so small, I can't do a helicopter.
Yeah.
Prove it.
Well, what's left of it?
Yeah, what's left of it?
What's left of it?
So he would be very he's looking down on us today, very disappointed that you're the man that made the documentary on him then, right?
Yeah, he's probably not jumping up and down over it.
Yeah. We got so many more questions about The Great Evel Knievel and about this documentary. It is called Being Evel. It is in theaters, also available video on demand and on iTunes today. And it just looks great. Johnny Knoxville is the producer, and he is in studio with us here on the Kevin Amin Show. More with our guests right after this on K-Rock. Talking about the late, great Evel Knievel, a man whom Johnny Carson introduced on The Tonight Show with this. He's probably the only man in history who's become very wealthy by trying to kill himself, which sounds about right. Johnny Knoxville likes Evel Knievel so much, he made a movie about him that's available everywhere today called Being Evel. That's E-V-E-L. So, Johnny, we're talking off air briefly about you did all this research. You knew Evel Knievel as a fan, but once you started to get into it a little deeper, you found out maybe more than you needed to know about him as a man, right?
Yeah, and we were very honest about that in the film because we didn't want to just make a glossy doc on Evel. We wanted to celebrate the things that needed to be celebrated and all the things he inspired, but you know, be honest what kind of person he was, and he had a dark side.
So he's a hero to you as a kid. Mm-hmm. How much of a dark side were you surprised by the dark side? How much it was?
I was disappointed by a lot of things. And it's tough to reconcile as an adult because I still love him. I think the child side of me I have a better understanding of what kind of person he was.
What did he go to jail for?
He went to, pre-jumping, he went to jail a few times for his name Evel Knievel in jail for, there's some guy named Knoffel was in there, and the jailer's like, tonight we got Awful Knoffel and Evel Knievel.
That's how he got his name?
Yeah. He changed the I to an E in Evel because he didn't want to sound too evil. But he went to jail for taking a ball bat to Shelley Saltman, and a guy who'd written a book about him, and who Evil had an agreement with. You can record all this, everything I say on this promotional tour for Snake River. And he had two guys hold Saltman and hit him with the bat. And that's just, that doesn't, you know, doesn't get any darker than that.
Yeah, no kidding. What's the hockey story, Johnny?
Oh, my God. So at 19, Evil was a great athlete. He was a hockey player, champion ski jumper, but he started this semi-pro hockey team called the Butte Bombers. And at the height of the Cold War, he convinced the Czechoslovakian national team to come to Butte to scrimmage his bombers.
What? How did he do that?
Because he was a salesman and a talker and just could such strong will. Anyway, the Czechs came and murdered him 22-3. In between each period, Evil would go on the ice and go, you know, the Czech delegation is larger than we anticipated. Can we pass the hat around so they're comfortable while they're here in Butte? Well, I'm not pointing fingers, but in the third period, Evil left the ice. That hat left the ice. And when he disappeared, all the money from the safe and all the proceeds from the game disappeared.
Oh, wow.
And the U.S. Olympic Committee had to go into Butte to get the Czechs out of there because they had no money to get out. But they never, no one ever was caught in that crime. But
he's amazing.
He talked the Czechoslovakians into coming here
and then ripped them off. Come on,
he's got more balls than I thought.
You gotta kind of respect.
you absolutely do. Yeah, that's one of those things that's so far over. I mean, if some Czech guy ripped off our team, I would be bummed, but I'd have to take my hat off.
You go good on you.
Yeah,
there'd be a war.
Well played.
Let's be honest.
Johnny, you said earlier that that Evel Knievel created the character of Evel Knievel. How different was the showman that we saw on TV leading up to and during those stunts from the private guy at home? Did he turn it off and was just a regular guy when he wasn't being this character?
He was Evel Knievel 100% of the time. I was doing a Q&A with Kelly Knievel, his son, in Vegas, and someone asked that question. He's like, nope, at the dinner table, Evel Knievel. And you can imagine what kind of home environment that made for him.
Wow.
He
turn it down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Take it down about 1,000.
Just about 1,000.
Come on, Dad. Really? The cape at the dinner table?
Well, if it wasn't for Evel Knievel, I don't think we'd have, you know, the WWE, all the people that created such big characters, but that's really scary that there wasn't a character. That was just him.
Well, I don't know if we would have Jackass if it wasn't for Evel.
I thought that too, yeah.
And we may have the X Games, but they would not be anywhere close to what they are now. Because they're top sportsmen, but they're also, there's a daredevil aspect to it, and that didn't come along until Evel.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
That's so weird to think about there not being somebody taking those kinds of risks. Yeah. Because we've grown up, you know, with people always taking those.
Yeah, I mean, there were automobile stunt shows like Joey Chitwood pre-Evel Knievel, but and what they were doing, far from safe. But you're inside a car, you got a cage, but Evel is just on a bike, and all he's got is the air protecting him.
And the air didn't do a very good job most of the time.
A lousy job protecting him.
How many bones did he break?
I don't know the exact number. He didn't break every bone in his body, but he broke several bone. He broke a lot of bones several times. I mean, he earned his pay.
Yeah, he busted himself up. And how did he die? I seem to remember something to do with an organ failure or something like that. What happened?
Lung disease.
That's what
after
it was.
All that.
Wow.
It was tough for him at the end. You know, all those surgeries and blood transfusions and. He had hepatitis from the blood transfusions. Lung disease got him.
Wow. What did he think about his son, Robbie, attempting to go in his footsteps as a stuntman? Was he supportive of him?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he was very supportive of him. And
Robbie, that's weird because it really destroyed Evel. I mean, he was broken apart. You want your son to do that?
Well, you know, I don't know how self-aware or Evel was, or how much reflection he did, you know?
All right.
You don't do that for a living if, you know.
Yeah, you're not happy. Yeah, I see your point. Johnny, you're a father. You've got young children. What's it going to be like for you when they discover the Jackass movies?
Well, you know, I have a 19-year-old, and I would only show her whatever I thought was reasonable depending on what age she was. Like when the TV show was on, she was four. So maybe Wee Man on as a Oompa Loompa. Or,
sure.
Not until Jackass 3 could she go to a premiere. And she was 14 or 15. But I still made her sit beside me. And I said, during certain parts, you have to cover your eyes and ears.
That is such a weird thought of you having to censor what your kids watch of you.
Well, the girls, I'm not so worried about, you know, but the boy, I'm definitely worried about. Yeah. He's very excitable.
And he has testicles.
He's already been
to
the emergency room a couple of times.
Oh, no.
So we're going to keep him. We're not showing him anything.
Yeah, he's got the internet. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know. I don't know what's going to happen.
He's going to see it all.
Yeah,
it just strikes me that Johnny Knoxville, you know, as a dad, does not have much room to talk his kids into not doing anything dumb. You know what I mean? It just seems like you don't have much to go on.
Well, my wife said that I'm very, like, I'm a helicopter dad when it comes to safety with the kids. Like, I follow them everywhere if they're playing on them. But as far as she goes, but as far as naughty stuff, if they do something naughty or say something naughty, I'm like
laughing.
The worst disciplinarian.
As long as it makes you laugh.
Yeah, as my son was on. They asked my son and daughter what I did for a living the other night on Kimmel, and my son comes out with, he poops his underwear. And so I
can
only
son?
Laugh. He's five.
Five. That's his impression.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, he's real sharp.
Well, the movie looks excellent. If it's half as good as the trailer, I can't wait to see it. So it's on video on demand. You can also buy it on iTunes. And it's at the Sundance Cinema in West Hollywood. That's where you're showing it on the big screen, right?
Yes, sir, and very proud of the documentary. You'll see, even people who knew about Evil, they did not know all the sides of him and all what we have in the doc. So I really recommend it.
That's awesome. It's a real treat. I'm so happy that you made this. I think a lot of people are really going to enjoy it. It's cool of you to stop by, Johnny. You know, we love you, man. It's great to see you on the show. Thanks for coming by.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Wow. 106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q. It's Kevin and Bean Show at 7:07.
Beer mug.
Bean Baxter.
We're having a meeting yesterday like we do after the show where we plan what's going on in the next day's show. And somehow, out of the blue, we were disrupted in an unusual way yesterday because it was like a light bulb went off over Beer Mug's head. We were talking about something completely different, and Muggs is like, "Guys, I got to tell you something." And we're like, what, Bugs?
Remind you of anybody, Bean?
No, it doesn't, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
I am very good at staying on point. So, Muggs, what was it that came into your little brain yesterday that you were so impressed by that you had to share with the whole room immediately?
Well, just recently I found out that I've been doing something wrong my entire life, and that is...
Haven't you been doing a lot wrong your entire life?
Okay. But this was one of them, and this was a milestone. I have been using the toilet seat covers in public restrooms wrong my entire life. I found out that, you know, the flap in the back, or the flap on the, well, I've been putting that in the back, just thinking, it needs to go in the back, just, I don't know, it just drops down and protects from, I guess, streaks. I don't know.
What?
I don't know. I just recently found out that's supposed to go in the front to protect your area from touching the front of the toilet seat.
How big is your area, though? Because this made no sense to me, because I also have been putting it in the back.
It's not a question of how big my area is. It's a question of how big the toilet seat is, because sometimes they come in all different shapes and sizes. So sometimes they're too small.
They do?
And they're mostly pretty much the same.
No,
but go ahead.
They're different.
All right, go ahead.
So, sometimes,
there are a lot of different shapes and sizes for toilet seats.
Yeah.
Is right.
And sometimes your area hits the front, and that you don't want that in a public restroom.
Right.
So
no.
What I would do to combat that is I would take toilet paper and drape it over the front so that would... But I realized it's built in on the toilet seat cover and it's meant for the front.
I didn't know that either.
That's pretty amazing.
I didn't
That's
know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Did you know that, Bean?
Yeah. That's the way it makes the most sense to put it on the toilet when you use it in a public restroom. But what did you think the flap was there in the back for, Allie? If you were putting it backwards, what did you think it was being used for?
They just didn't cut it off. It was like, sorry.
Wait, what?
Is
a manufacturing error for all of them?
This way, you know what? Just ship it.
Just leave it.
Nobody cares.
I didn't even think about it.
It should be
every
cut, but...
paper toilet seat cover in your lifetime you thought was an error.
Well, that's lazy.
Oh, that is interesting. So, Muggs,
I can't believe I'm about to ask you this question, but is this something you figured out on your own, or were you sharing a toilet with someone? Who pointed this out to you?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how
if he's been doing it wrong his whole life, what could have happened that made him finally figure it out? Unless somebody else told him.
I was scrolling through my Twitter feed, and I found this article on BuzzFeed that said, it's like a life hack article or whatever,
right.
And it said, did you know that the flap of the toilet seat cover is supposed to go in the front? I was like, what? That's
mind blown.
I'm mind blown.
I'm with
you. So Muggs tells us that, and then Allie, of course, is embarrassed because she realizes her intellect is on par with beer mugs.
nobody wants that.
And then we thought, wouldn't it be interesting to open this up to our listeners about a thing that you found out late in life, say, you know, as an adult or older than you should have been to figure it out, that you had been doing wrong your entire life. Something that occurred to you or somebody pointed out to you that you had been doing wrong. Something the rest of us take for granted that seems pretty simple to figure out. For whatever reason, the message didn't get to you. And that's what we want to hear from you about at 1-800-520-1067. You can call right now. You can also text us, of course, at the number 2KROQ, 2KROQ, 25767. In that same conversation with Muggs yesterday, as we were fascinated with his him figuring that out, he told us something else that he didn't find out until fairly recently as well.
Yes, this was – sometimes you have a rental car, not your normal car, and you're like – you get to the gas pump.
Wait, so you're in a rental car but not your normal car?
Right, right. Just to clarify that.
All right.
And you don't know what side the gas tank is on.
Right.
And you get out and you're like, oh, crap, I got to get back in and turn around. Yeah, there's an indicator on your fuel gauge. Every car, there's an arrow pointing to the side of the gas tank where you fill up.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
It's where the little gas tank icon
is.
Then there's an arrow to which side.
No idea.
So you've been turning around and then backing up and then
I've been sticking my head out the window trying to see if it's on my side or the passenger side. It's unbelievable.
I know this is going to be hard for you to believe, but I think that's something that most people learn at age 16 when they get behind the wheel of a car and have to buy gas.
Not I, said the blind man.
What?
Oh, that was good.
So, have you ever been at a gas station when there's a lot of people waiting and then you realize you're in the wrong way and then you have to try and sort of block other people while you turn around?
I've been that guy, and I've also seen other people do that. They have to back up.
Everyone else does that. Right.
Well, I just realized life was so hard up until I found out these awesome tips and tricks that have been there all along.
It's not a trick.
Sort of is.
It's just knowledge.
It's designed that way by auto manufacturers to make it easier for people to buy fuel. It's not a secret. It hasn't been hidden. It's not like it has to be passed down by generations.
I had no idea. I had no idea that the arrow, that's what the arrow was for. I didn't even know what the arrow was for.
What a happy day that. Wait, you saw the arrow and didn't know what it was for?
You saw the arrow.
Exactly.
You noticed the arrow was there.
I thought it was just like an extra design that they put on the gauge.
Hey, here's the gas tank.
Hey,
look.
Look, in case you're running low, this is where you look.
What?
Yeah, it was pretty stupid.
I would have thought you didn't know it was there. That's okay, I think.
But you
saw the arrow?
I saw it, and when I found out, I was like, that's what that's for.
All right, let's take a couple calls real quick before the break. 1-800-520-1067. The topic on the table is, what were you doing wrong your whole life until you found out you were doing it wrong? Let's start with Amy. She's in Yorba Linda. She's up first. She's on line two. Muggs, you can leave and go help answer some calls, please, and we'll get some other people on the line here. Your beer mug, light bulb above the head moment. Amy, welcome to the Kevin DeBean Show. What's going on?
Hi, good morning. My light bulb was when I was arguing with my then-boyfriend, now husband. I was probably about 25 or 26. I was arguing with him, telling him he needed to compromise with me. And I said the word compromise a couple times, and then he said...
Compromise?
And then he said, do you mean compromise? And he just busted out laughing. And I said, compromise wrong until that moment.
Oh, I get it.
You said compromise your whole life?
I said compromise my whole... Nobody corrected me. Nobody.
Amy?
Well, if we're going to use words, then Allie's got 100.
Yeah. Last week, we were talking about Monopoly and what was the best thing to use. Do you use the race car? Do you use...
Top hat.
And I said, well, the wheelbarrow is stupid, right? And they're like, wheel what? And I said, wheelbarrow.
Two words.
Are you aware it's called a wheelbarrow? I had no idea until last week. I've been saying wheelbarrow my whole life.
Look at that.
Amy, help me here. Amy, you said compromise.
Did you
help.
Ever say compromise?
I did.
Amy, how did no one say, what are you talking about earlier in your life?
I have no idea. They all knew what I was talking about, obviously.
That's awesome. All right, Amy, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate that. Let's do one more real quick. Let's do Alex in Downey. He's up next, line one on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Kevin and Bean. Hey, so,
you were doing it wrong your whole life until you figured it out. What was it?
So I've been pouring milk first before I actually pour the cereal food. A lot of my friends would tell me that, oh, you're doing it wrong. It's the cereal first before the milk. In case, like, you know, if you pour the milk and you don't have any cereal, you're pretty much screwed from then.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And you were pouring milk your whole life first?
Yeah, ever since I was a little boy, and then just like, you know, when my friends just told me, I just felt a little bit of, I felt really stupid, so I just started pouring the cereal from now
on. Well, I pour the cereal first because when you do milk first, then it splashes when you pour the cereal in. Is that what we're talking about here? Is that why cereal is first?
No, they just told me, like, oh, just in case, like, if cereal runs out and you have just the milk on the bowl right there, you're kind of, like, screwed.
Because you can't pour the milk back in the carton.
Yeah.
All right. All right, Alex. I feel like you need to wear a helmet.
At 1-800-520-1067. I was doing it wrong my whole life. What?
Just an update. Alex hung up immediately when I said
that.
Oh,
Alex.
You hurt his feelings. It's just a joke, Alex.
It's cereal.
Come on.
We'll take your calls next on K-Rock. Talking about things you thought or did wrong your whole life until someone pointed it out or you figured it out on your own. For instance, we heard from the 626 texting into K-Rock at the number 2 K-Rock. I just learned this year about the toilet seat covers and the gas arrow, and I'm 44. I wonder if you just learned about those listening to our show this morning.
Did Beer Mug text that?
From the 805, I was about 23 when I realized that the Underground Railroad wasn't an actual train situation, says Sarah.
Well... That must have been
a fun talk. So we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Let's go with we got some good ones here. Let's try Chris in Long Beach. He's on line 6. Mm-hmm. I bet he's got one that some people are going to learn about right now listening to this show.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you. By the way, before we move on, I would just like to put in a rule, and that is Bean, Allie, me, Chip. If we didn't know what they're talking about, we have to admit it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
put it out there. All right, go ahead, Chris.
All right, well, I didn't know until semi-recently that Chinese food boxes, like the small white ones with the little metal handles that they eat in movies and stuff like that, like in all these detective movies and stuff, I didn't know if you took the metal handle out, it turned into a plate.
Now, I have heard that, but I have never seen anyone use it because when I get Chinese food to bring, I usually bring it home. So I put it onto a plate. So I've never had to make a plate out of the cardboard, but I have heard that that is a thing. And I do also know that you can take the metal hooks out if you want to reheat Chinese food in the microwave. I do know that they make them so that you can take the metal part off for microwaving.
Do I have to admit if I have no idea what Chris is even talking about?
Like, you take the metal handles off, and it goes down into an actual plate.
You unfold
like
the box that the Chinese food is in. Yeah, so... All right, that's a good one.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris. Right. Appreciate that.
You okay, Kevin?
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's try. Is it Tarek? Tarek on line one? What do you guys guess that name is?
Close enough is what that name is.
What is your name, Tarek?
It's Tarek.
Tarek.
Tarek. Okay, go ahead. What did you learn late in life?
All right, so pretty recently, months ago, I said espresso, and they said, what did you say? I said espresso. You want some espresso?
Right.
You mean espresso? Espresso. And so apparently that's not the case. It makes total sense because express, quickly.
Right. Can we understand that word?
Not so much.
I bet that is a fairly common mispronunciation.
I hear it all the time.
Yeah. No shame in that game, Tarek. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate that. There is some shame in Vivian's game, though. She's in Paramount. She's on line 3, and she is preparing to be humiliated on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, Vivian.
Hi.
Things you've been doing wrong your entire life.
Well, only since I've been cooking, I would say. But I didn't know that the drawer below the oven was a broiler, something that actually warms up your food. I thought it was just a drawer to hold trays and pots and pans.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Is that...
Same.
Same.
Yeah. I kept sweaters in there.
Sweaters? Yeah.
There was, during college, there wasn't a lot of space. So when my mom came to visit, I said, oh, grab it from the drawer under the oven. She's like, the broiler?
You mean the broiler?
I'm like, call it what you will, but grab the sweater. Vivian, what's wrong with us?
Wow.
How did you find out, Vivian?
A friend of mine was, like, telling me a recipe and what she was doing, and then she told me she used the broiler, and I said, oh, well, I don't have a broiler. And she said, yeah, you do. It's the drawer that's underneath your oven. I was like, that is a working mechanism. I thought that was just to hold stuff.
Well, I mean, it does hold stuff as well in your defense.
Yes, yes.
Sure. All right, Vivian. Okay. Great call. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for that. All right. We got time for a couple more, Kevin. Who do you like here?
Just not Ryan. Anybody but Ryan.
Let's go to Ryan. He's up next. He's in East LA, line 7. Ryan, thank you for calling. Welcome to the Kevin DeBeat Show.
Hey, what up, guys?
Hey!
What's up, everybody?
Yes?
So I found out kind of late in life you're supposed to wipe your butt from front to back, not back to front.
Not back to front?
Okay, I'm trying to visualize here. And tell me the light bulb moment. Like, how did it come up, and why was it explained to you differently than you'd been doing?
Just a random conversation.
What kind of conversations are you having?
Deep, intense, intimate conversations.
Let's talk about butts, Ryan says.
Well, I will say at the lady doctor, when you have to give a urine sample, there are explicit directions of wiping.
Explicit. Allie, explicit.
What did I say?
I'm sorry. I was making an espresso joke. Go ahead.
I hate you. You're supposed to wipe from front to back. So, I mean, I'm not saying you have a vagina, Ryan, but it's same for ladies.
Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate that. Let's go to Toby on line 4. What the hell is Toby talking about in Los Angeles?
Hey, Toby, what are you talking about?
Hey, guys. So, in fairness, this is from a TED Talk that I just recently saw.
A TED Talk? So you learned from a TED Talk?
I learned a ton of stuff from the TED Talk, man.
Okay, go ahead.
But anyways, so apparently everyone I know is tying their shoes incorrectly.
Tying your shoes incorrectly?
Yeah. So the speaker starts off and he ties his shoes like pretty much all of us do, right? Where you've got the two strings, then you tie the little knot, then you make a bow with one, and then you've sort of got a string with the other.
How are you not already out of that TED Talk by that moment? Honestly, like, that seems dull.
I mean, you do have the rest of the internet available to you, right?
The juice is worth the squeeze. I promise. Hold on. So then, typically people will then pull that string part up over the loop part and then tie the two together, right? And then boom, you've got your tied shoe. Apparently the problem with that way of doing it is that when you put stress on the knot, that makes it a looser knot so that the bows are now going kind of up and down on your foot, whereas if you would tie the knot like normal, and then when you bow with the one, if you tie the string underneath the bow part first and then pull it taut, it goes from side to side. It's really hard to do. Google.
It's not our
fault.
There's nothing we can do if the phone's ringing. I'm so sorry. Thanks for the call.
Google.
Just heard from a Kevin DeBeat listener, Olivia, who is 48 years old, has been driving since she was 17, and did not know until Beer Mug mentioned it on the air 20 minutes ago about the little arrow on the gas tank on her car to tell her which side of the car the tank is on. So she learned a little something listening to the show.
But if I could give some advice, don't tell people the beer mug part of it.
Right.
That's right.
Just act like you knew it.
Exactly.
Boom. A lot of people learning stuff from Beer Mug this morning.
Yeah.
Wow.
This gas tank thing, guys?
That's crazy.
I mean, I'm getting so many emails. I got an email from a guy who's owned 24 cars in his life, has never noticed that little arrow before.
Yeah, people are dumb.
Well,
I think we're finding out.
Something that people perhaps needed pointed out to them by somebody at some point in their life, I think, is all.
But when you get in the car the first time when you're 16 years old, they say, here's the turn indicator. You use this switch to show which way you're going.
Right.
Here's the speedometer so you see how fast you're going.
Right.
Here's the gas gauge so you see how much gas you have. And then that little pump, the little gas pump right there, the arrow points to it so you know always what side your gas cap is on.
Yeah. If somebody points that out to you, then you know it. But if somebody doesn't.
Right. If someone like never point out to you where the turn indicator was, would you just drive around willy-nilly changing lanes without ever letting everybody know?
Well, you'd roll out your window and go, look out!
But
then just one of them would say, "What side is my gas tank on?" People randomly at gas stations.
I think I found that thing out about the aero about 4 or 5 years ago, probably. I didn't know that.
Because most cars didn't have it back in the day.
Right. Okay. Okay. Good. Right.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Coal burning cars. I had a wood burning car myself. One of those Ben Franklin potbelly cars.
Well, anyway, the point is a lot of people learning a lot of things on the Kevin and Bean Show. That is very unusual. Not the position we usually find ourselves in doing this show. That's for sure. They've been together since 1993, formed in the beautiful town of Madison, Wisconsin. 1995, their debut album came out. Since then, it's been 17 million records sold, and they've toured the world. Ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure to have back at K-Rock, Garbage!
I thought you were going to say 17 million years.
It feels like that, I think.
Does it feel since like 17 then, million years?
Since then, it's been
something like that.
All right, let's identify for the kids listening
hold
at home.
Hold on. Shirley?
She's not authorized to touch the bell.
Shirley, have you taken the bell course? Safety course?
I don't need the safety course for the bell.
We don't let anyone just ring the bell.
Except you.
Eat me.
You don't just jump in a car and start driving until dad has shown you what's what.
Yes,
come
I
on.
Do. I've done that my whole life. It hasn't done me any harm.
Take the bell away from me.
Something better take this bell away. Seriously, I can feel that I'll just abuse it.
Yeah.
Who's in the room for the kids listening at home? Who's here today?
Duke.
Butch.
Steve.
Shirley.
Wow. Got the whole band.
All of us.
Sweet. All right. We got a lot of ground we got to cover in just a few minutes, and the band is going to be performing live in a little bit, too. Let's take it back to the beginning, Butch, and I think this is a question for you. What's going on in Madison, Wisconsin in 1993 that makes you think, hey, it's time to make a band?
Well, you know, by the time I had started Garbage with my bandmates here, I think I had probably done 1,000 punk rock records. And this is before Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins. And I honestly, I was just getting tired of bass guitars and drums. And Steve brought in a Public Enemy record one day, and I listened to it. And to me, that was like one of the most exciting albums I'd ever heard because they were using samplers. It just sounded crazy. So we bought some samplers, and Duke and I and Steve started doing remixes, and that sensibility sort of inspired us to start Garbage.
So you knew these guys, you knew Steve, you knew Duke, and had known them for a long time, and then you decided, let's really ruin this and bring a girl in.
Hey!
Right, we're having so much fun, but how could we... Hey! was your vision from the beginning always that you would have a lady singer?
Yeah, I mean, we thought that would be cool from the get-go, just because...
Why? Because ladies are cool.
Yeah, and we'd always been in bands with dudes, you know, so...
We're going to have to move the bell.
Just like, let's change it.
So are girls.
Tell us about, if I recall correctly, you weren't thrilled with your audition? Or you hated it, or you...
Yeah, it was a bit
nervous,
of a...
Too nervous? Or?
Fiasco.
Fiasco.
I hated them, and they hated me. No, we just didn't click that day for a lot of different reasons. But we sure did click later on.
Yes, you did.
Woo!
Now there's the bell. What's wrong with you?
I was going to do the bell, but I saw that you were very upset that I was abusing
the
bell.
I'm not really upset.
Shirley, what did you think when you met the guys and you guys said, hey, what do you want to do? You want to do this or not? Was it something that was automatically easy for you to say yes to, or is it something you were kind of unsure about waiting into?
I thought they were the best bunch looking dudes I'd ever met in my life, and I signed up immediately.
Musically, though, you guys all spoke the same language.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, we got on really well immediately, and we had a good chemistry right from the start, and I don't know, the gods were with us, and we just enjoyed something sort of magical in a funny way. The whole ascent of our band was really blessed. Like, we were all in good health, nobody died, there weren't any terrible accidents, you know.
Like,
it was
nobody
really
died is one of the things that you're lucky.
Yeah.
That keeps the band going.
It sure does.
But we're about to go on tour, so who knows?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Part of the reason you guys are here today, and this is the band Garbage in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show, is that you are doing this 20 years queer tour to celebrate the 20th anniversary of your debut album. And when you play the Greek 1 week from tonight on October 8th, you'll be performing this entire album, right? And then other Garbage songs from the catalog.
Yes, we are going to play all the songs from... the Garbage debut album, and all the B-sides. There's 9 or 10 or 11, possibly. I can't remember.
Easy.
But we're going to do them all. And it's going to be an interesting night. It's going to be fun.
I read someplace that you were super, probably all of you used to pay a lot more attention to critics and people who would tell you whether you were good or bad, and it would hurt your feelings. Is that difficult, and are you better at it now? Just ignoring
it? Yeah, I've stopped
it?
Giving a...
But, I like it.
Definitely when I was coming out, you know, I was coming from a place of, I met those three gents in my band, and they were very accomplished, and I was really intimidated
really?
By that. Yeah. And
thanks. That's her memory.
That was my memory, and little did I know the truth behind it all, of course. But no, I was in seriousness. I was very intimidated by their musicality and their reputations and so on and so forth, and I didn't feel I was good enough to be doing what I was doing. And so, yeah, whenever I would read a good review, I'd just go, that person doesn't know what they're talking about. Whenever I read a bad review, I'd really take it to heart, and I would say, see, they're right. What my inner voice, my evil inner voice is right. I am I mean, it's really sick. I think a lot of people do that, actually. I don't think I'm the only one.
That's a tough way to live.
It's really tough. I mean, it was that whole album cycle was hard for me because of that, you know. I mean, luckily, those three were always like, don't worry about it. Let's just have a beer. Forget about it. So I was lucky that I had those three to sort of keep me balanced. Otherwise, I'm sure I would have gone off the rails.
Was there a point where you just said, I'm not going to listen to that, read that?
Mm-hmm. It was when I read something, now this was much later on, this was probably by our third record, somebody wrote something about me looking fat and I'd looked like I'd been eating too many Twinkies. And I called my dad up in Edinburgh, Scotland, and he said, you know, it serves you right for trying to look for affirmation, you know, in the media. You know better than that. Stop doing that. Stop reading about yourself. Grow up. And from then on, actually, I think I started just weaning myself off reading about myself.
Off of Twinkies.
Did
off
he say...
Off the Twinkies.
Did your dad say eat fewer Twinkies as well?
No, he didn't.
Not
he,
at all.
He was all for me eating lots of Twinkies.
All right. We got to take a quick break. The band Garbage is here. Their show is next Thursday night, 1 week from tonight at The Greek. It's the Garbage 20 Years Queer Tour in celebration of the 20-year anniversary just passed in August of the first album coming out from the band. More with our guests and they'll be performing live coming up on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
Yay!
Attention, Garbage fans.
It's the 20th anniversary of our debut album,
Garbage.
We're going on tour this fall to play a handful of shows.
In celebration!
We'll be playing the entire record
front to back!
For the first time
ever!
We hope all our fans will come join with us.
To celebrate!
Well done.
Garbage, 20 years queer.
What are you guys doing?
Well
what
done.
What nonsense is that? Seriously.
That is a load of nonsense, it's true. But we had a lot of fun doing it.
Garbage is here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Shirley and Steve and Duke and Bidge.
Butch. That's a good new name for you, Bidge.
I like it. They are back and in town playing at the Greek.
My phrase has been coined.
1 week from today. Why did you make the decision to do what you're doing, which is to play this album from front to back at the shows on the tour this time around, rather than just a regular set?
I'll throw that to Bidge, my good friend Bidge on the drums over there.
Bidge, how come?
I think when we finished the tour for Not Your Kind of People, we discovered that we still have a fan base, and we were sort of excited to think about putting out a 20th deluxe anniversary edition, not so much for nostalgia, but just to actually celebrate that we'd been around for 20 years. And we really, that record really did change our lives in some ways. And when we went back and started listening to the mastering, it got us excited to go out and play these shows. And this is a small tour. We're only doing about 6 weeks or so. So it's going to be very selective. And I think for hardcore Garbage fans, it's going to be a real treat.
Are you playing them in order, or are you trying to figure out like what to play next and how they fit together and
we're
all that?
We're not sure
yet. What do you
yet.
Think we should do?
We're in discussion.
we're taking suggestions
Rock,
at this
paper,
point.
Rock, paper, scissors?
I think that's kind of how we'll do it.
20 years since the album, you were together for about a year and a half before this first record came out. Has there ever been a low point in Garbage where you thought it might not continue?
Many times.
But, for reals?
Yeah, but not recently and not back then. I mean, we had a sort of crazy run for three records, you know. I mean, it was just all sort of joy and fun. Mm-hmm. And then probably somewhere around about 2001 when things got a bit hairy then, and then they went downhill fast. By about 2005, we'd had enough of each other for a bit. not actually because we had had enough of each other, but just because the music business had changed so much, it was unpleasant for us to exist in as the kind of band we were and the kind of people we were in, that we were. So we sort of took a break.
That's really interesting. I mean, you know, we all love the music. We love music. We follow the music industry. But it's interesting to hear your perspective from inside that. So it just wasn't a fun job anymore after a while until you waited long enough where it was again.
Pretty much. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the way I remember it was our record company said, you know, alt rock's dead. And you need to do a pop record, and you need to work with a rapper that everybody knows. And we were like, well, you know, that's just not really our style.
That's what they said for real?
Totally.
That
yeah.
is pretty much what they said. And I mean, I'm paraphrasing it because it was a long meeting and it was tense and there were long pauses and it would be so boring on radio to listen to.
Wow.
An exact replication of that conversation.
So you deprived us of a Young Jeezy remix, is what you're saying. That could have happened if it hadn't been for you, actually.
Yeah, maybe so. But we felt it was really phony and wasn't really where we were coming from in a funny way. It just felt like too manufactured and I don't know.
Let me ask another question about the debut album that we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of. The song Queer, I'm trying to put myself back in the mindset of a guy in 1995 hearing that song on the radio for the first time. It seems to me that it would have really stood out as being something completely different than anything else anyone else was making at the time. Is that accurate?
I love that song.
Me too.
You know, when we went back and remastered the first album, I think to all of us it has a odd sound to it. Mm-hmm. And part of that sound is from our using samplers, like almost 90% of the tracks at some point went through the samplers and either got cut up or chopped up or pasted around. And we were listening to hip-hop, so there's a bit of a hip-hop in some of the grooves on that. But it definitely is an odd-sounding album, and that track, Queer, is probably one of the most sort of unusual tracks compared to some of the more rock songs on the debut album.
It was one of the first songs that Cheryl sang on, and she brought this persona to it that we worked around. We had this demo where we were doing our own, like, ridiculous, you know, own vocals on it. And Cheryl came and she gave it this persona, and that basically what guided us to.
And then the rest of you changed the music to fit her.
Well, a lot of it,
singing.
Yeah. Kind of worked around her voice.
What's special about that song is, you know, the lyrical content. At the time, you know, nobody. It's very fashionable now to do it, but back in 1995, it wasn't au courant at all to talk about the LGBT.
Hey, English only, Shirley. English only here on the Canada Beach.
Right? Sorry.
No, Jesus. Enough German.
It wasn't fashionable to talk about the LGBT community in any way, shape or form. And so it was kind of bold to hear that on radio back then. I mean, it's almost inconceivable now that 20 years have passed, but...
Hey, knock on wood, you guys are still here and friends. We're still here and friends.
I know. I was thinking about that this morning.
We're all so lucky to still be together.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Ring the bell.
You guys, this is hot in here.
All right. We are going to take you down the hall to the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock. Have you seen it? It's a beautiful room, just a few feet from where we're sitting right now. And y'all are going to perform live for us, right?
Yep.
Allegedly.
I can't wait. The show is 1 week from tonight at the Greek Theater, the Garbage 20 Years Queer Tour. Let's give away a pair of tickets before we send the guys down to the Red Bull Sound Space for callers 20 and 21 right now at 1-800-520-1067. You win tickets to go see the band at the Greek. There may be just a couple of seats on the outside available. You can go to axs.com to see if there are still tickets available for sale, but you can call and win them right now from the Kevin and Bean Show. All right, Garbage performs live right after this on K-Rock.
We are back at K-Rock. It is the Red Bull Sound Space. We're here with our old friend, Garbage, who are going to perform live.
Garbage! Come on with the garbage!
What are we going to hear first?
I think we're going to do Only Happy When It Rains. I'm only happy when it rains.
So sad, I'm only happy when it rains. Pour your misery down.
Still sounding so great. That is Garbage in the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock and the Kevin and Bean Show. The 20th anniversary edition reissue of their debut album is going to be available in stores and for download tomorrow. They'll be playing The Greek 1 week from tonight. Go to AXS.com to see if there are still tickets left. And we'd love it if you guys could play one more for us.
No problem.
Fantastic. Live Garbage.
I'll be
Garbage of the world famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ from the Red Bull Sound Space.
And again, that's too much sexy, you guys. That's too much sexy for this time of day. I'm sorry.
Too much sexy. Beat is ruling too much sexy. The show is again next Thursday, October 8th at the Greek Theater. There are still a few tickets available. That's ridiculous. So buy those and go see this band. It's a great place to see a band as well. You guys are always nice to K-Rock. We've known you all 20 years, and you've always been good to us, so thank you.
Thank you, guys.
How about garbage?
How about garbage? And here's a note, by the way. We are going to have a great performance in the Red Bull Sound Space of those songs, and we are going to have that up at krock.com this afternoon. You can actually watch the video if you want to see it as well. And whatever you do, don't miss going to see them at the Greek next Thursday night, for reals, because they are great live.
We also have something to give away, 1-800-520-1067. You get a digital download code for Marvel's Avengers Age of Ultron. It's available now on digital HD, and it's available on Blu-ray tomorrow. So call now, 1-800-520-1067. Good luck.
I want to talk about shark attacks for a minute here. Ralph said something yesterday that was very troubling to me, that shark attacks are on the rise. Now, aren't sharks the most terrifying thing in the world, really?
To me, they are, yeah.
Top five,
Chip,
yeah.
Yeah. Chip, you go surfing, bodyboarding, stuff like that. How much do you think about it? I mean, the shark attacks are a thing that happen in Southern California. How often do you think about, every time you get into the water, what if today's the day I get bit?
Not really, but lately I've not been surfing because there have been so many in Huntington lately, like with the baby great whites and stuff. So I've been, they're probably not going to attack me, but I just don't want to take that chance.
Plus, you're so tiny, it would be really hard for a shark to find you, right?
Exactly.
Plus, it's an appetizer. They might leave you alone.
Shark attacks are on the rise. Here's one example, by the way. It won't surprise you that Florida is the number one state in the union for shark attacks. Of course, it has a lot of shoreline and a lot of people. It makes sense. 28 shark attacks in Florida last year. There were only 4 in North Carolina last year, but there were 2 on Sunday. 2 shark attacks on Sunday, 2 different people bit about 2 miles away from one another. One of whom, by the way, was a 16-year-old boy named Hunter Tresci, who lost his arm below the shoulder. Now, think about that guy. He's a 16-year-old kid going out into the water going, hey, I'm enjoying my weekend. Hey, this is fun. The next thing you know, dude's got no arm for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Do you see his statement is that he didn't feel it. He saw his arm in the water.
Oh,
that seems bad.
Oh. And the reason, Kevin, did you read further? The reason he didn't feel it is because he was concentrating on how much it hurt that the shark bit his leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't notice that his arm was missing. So I don't know what the hell is going on there in North Carolina. I don't know what the hell is going on around the world, but shark attacks seem way up. And we asked producer Dave, is there somebody we can talk to on the scene in North Carolina? And I believe we go there now to talk to reporter Ricky Goodman, who joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show. Mr. Goodman, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Hello, Kevin and Bean. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Well, we're fine. What's the situation like there in North Carolina? Are people panicked? Are people staying away from the water as a result of these recent attacks?
As you can imagine, people are very upset here in North Carolina. I'm actually here on the beach, and I've got an interview with the shark himself.
Oh.
Mr. Shark, many people were surprised to hear that sharks are found in these waters. Where do you usually swim? All along the eastern shore. How is the water here in North Carolina?
The water is warm.
On the day of the attack, you were the only shark spotted in the water. Why do you hunt alone?
Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner.
Now, Mr. Shark, some people have been saying that the teenagers should not have been swimming in those waters. Is there anything you'd like to say to those 2 kids?
It's not your fault, but mine.
What would you say to the other beachgoers that are there on the beach?
I'm on the hunt, I'm after you.
What's it like when you see a beach full of vacationers?
Just like heaven.
Yes, they must look like colorful candies to you. Are tourists your favorite food?
Candy on the beach, there's nothing better.
How many could you eat in one day? Don't you ever get full? There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to these recent attacks. Why is that, Mr. Shark? When it comes to your food, do you have a preference for males or females? Speaking of which, you seem to have your eye on that female swimmer over there right now.
This woman is my destiny.
Now I can see that you are a great white shark. How do people feel about that?
All the girlies say I'm pretty fly for a white guy.
Speaking of great whites, as a shark, how do you feel when you watch a movie like Jaws?
There goes my hero.
Well, like in that movie, there's been some talk here in North Carolina of a group of fishermen banding together to hunt you down and kill you. It is so. And if they try to stop you, will you continue to feed in these waters?
Yeah.
Why?
You gotta fight for your right.
Well, there you have it, Kevin and Bean, right from the shark's mouth.
Ladies and gentlemen, reporter Ricky Goodman on the scene in North Carolina. Well done, sir.
Exclusive K-Rock Street Team on sale for this year's Acoustic Christmas shows happens tomorrow at noon. Tickets for both nights are going on sale through Ticketmaster.com. You can get all the details at K-Rock.com if you want to be part of that weekend that is going to feature 22 excellent K-Rock artists, all performing spanning two nights, the 12th and 13th of December at the Forum. Again, tickets available at Ticketmaster.com. All the details at K-Rock.com. Hope to see you there.
You do need the password, so make sure that you sign up. All right. Mugs splains bees.
Bees! Woo! Well, that's not a complicated topic.
Bean, recap for people how this all came up.
I think it came up as simply as Ralph did a story in the Showbiz Beat mentioning that Ian Ziering from Sharknado and Beverly Hills 90210 back in the day was going to be making an appearance at a hardware store the next day in the Valley protesting the use of pesticides that he and his wife were very active beekeepers think is killing off the bees, helping contributing to killing off the bees, which has become a major problem in America, particularly in California where so much of the nation's food is made. You can't make most foods without bee pollination. So we all thought it was hilarious that this is what Ian was doing with his time. So we talked to him on the air about the protest that morning, and then we sent Mugs down there. I think it started right around 10 o'clock that day to get some interviews with Ian, his wife Erin, and also the people who might have shown up to join the protest.
So, Mugs, how many people were down there when you got down there?
I'd say 8 or 9 people.
8 or 9?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. That's not a big turnout.
No.
But Muggs interviews Erin and Ian, which I think is great. Well, he starts interviewing Ian and his wife Erin, but Erin wasn't there at the time.
Okay.
So he tried a couple of different times to get things started.
I am here with Ian and his lovely wife Erin Ziering, and they're here. I am here with Ian Ziering and his lovely wife Erin. It's all right. She'll come over later.
You want to go again?
Yeah.
That's Ian. That's Ian asking him if he wants to go again.
Want another run at that?
Just making sure.
What was Erin doing at the time you started the interview with her?
She was preoccupied with a real news outlet.
Why did you start the interview if she wasn't standing in front of you?
Well, because I thought she was going to come. I thought she was finishing up with that news outlet as I was starting. And no, she wasn't.
And you couldn't wait 30 seconds for her to troll over to where you were?
It looked like she was coming over to me, and then she got pulled back.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
But at least
she's ridiculously hot, right?
Ridiculously hot.
Yeah.
Good for Ian.
Yeah.
So she's
finally... that wasn't the point.
Stick to the bees, Bean.
So she finally comes over, and now Muggs is talking to the happy couple. I'm sorry, talking at the happy couple.
Addressing not only a local problem, but a national problem.
Global problem.
Global problem. The vanishing of our world's honeybees. And we are at the Ace Hardware here in Studio City. And I noticed you guys walked into the store earlier. Not too bad of a confrontation with the manager. But he ended up being helpful in what you're doing is spreading awareness of the pesticides that are killing the honeybees.
Right.
Now,
is that a question, first of all? And you were summarizing, like, the run-in that they had with the manager?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were telling Ian what he'd just done.
Right, I had to make it elaborate for our listeners.
I see.
Ah, paint a picture, really.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, so Muggs is painting a picture. And I want you to hear Ian's participation before Muggs goes on, because Muggs loves Muggs. And Muggs does not really want answers. Muggs wants to talk.
What you're doing is spreading awareness of the pesticides that are killing the honeybees.
Right.
Now, I think the common misconception about bees in general is that they're all dangerous and they're going to sting you and you're allergic and you're going to die. But honeybees are...
Now, forgive me for just butting in here, but he's the guy down there talking about honeybees.
Yeah, right. You're not telling
he's
him
the expert.
New.
Why are you telling him the thing about honeybees?
Is this a passion of yours? Do you?
I wanted to show him that I knew a little bit about the bees.
Okay.
But is that what the point of the interview is? Is for us to see how much you know about bees? Or is it to talk to the guy who's organized the protest, who's a beekeeper, to tell us what he knows about bees?
I suppose it's the latter.
You're doing good work.
Bees in general is that they're all dangerous and they're going to sting you and you're allergic and you're going to die. But honeybees are innately harmless, right?
Right.
I've noticed myself, I was telling Aaron earlier that
so far we've gotten two words out of the happy couple.
Right.
Right. And right. And then Muggs takes the microphone back and just keep. This is a filibuster. That's what's happening right now. Muggs is doing a one-man show. And they're just standing there looking at him, trying to figure it out.
In this area, when I was a kid and during the summertime, when spring is blooming, you'd see a lot of honeybees. But now it's real. Like, I don't see that many out there. And it's kind of concerning, especially since they're a big part of our ecosystem now.
Okay, I just want to point out.
Oh, my God.
I just want to point out we're a minute 15 in.
Okay.
And we've gotten you want to try that again? And then right and right.
You're right, Kevin. It's a filibuster. He's trying to wear Ian down so Ian hates bees at the end of it.
It's a filibuster.
Get out.
Oh, jeez.
That wasn't bad, Bugs. I mean, really, let's be honest. All right, let's continue.
Can you get the EPA involved, maybe? Is that
the EPA is involved. So, again, awareness is growing. Change is happening. Unfortunately, it just happens slowly.
Where can people go to get information and be, turn the ignorance around to honeybees?
All right.
Well said.
Yep. Nailed it.
You want another run at that question?
Turn the ignorance around to honeybees.
They can visit the Friends of the Earth organization.
And I saw somewhere real quick, there was a grid.
Is this unbelievable?
Wow.
Is it unbelievable?
Yes.
It is unbelievable.
When I was a kid, I used to be scared of bees.
They didn't even have to be there. Muggs could have taped this interview in the parking lot of K-Rock without them.
Turn the ignorance around to honeybees.
They can visit the Friends of the Earth organization.
And I saw somewhere real quick, okay. There was a grid that said without honeybees, we wouldn't have a lot of items like when it comes to produce, and a lot.
Two-thirds of the things that you put into your mouth are because of a honeybee population.
Yeah. Well, people, if you like your honey, do something about it.
Right.
That's the call to action right there.
Yeah!
If you like your honey, do something about it.
But you guys have to admit, you're now more well-informed about the bee situation.
I mean, here's the thing that I would like to focus on, because then Muggs goes on and talks to other people about bees. People.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People who really aren't there for the bees.
Oh,
and,
no.
And really don't know much about the bees.
Oh.
But the two-thirds of the food that we eat is Muggs' question to every single one of them. And he tries to school them all. So he'll say, are you upset about the bees? And they'll go, no. And he'll go, well, did you know 2/3 of the food they eat, you wouldn't have if it wasn't for bees.
So they were just down there to see the guy from Sharknado.
Probably. Or to,
that's
or,
why they came.
Or to buy something at the shop.
Right, get a hammer.
Right, they could have just been going to the hardware store.
Some nails. And Muggs is asking them about the bees and then trying to shame them into caring about the bees. Oh. It's spectacular. All right, we need to take a break.
Okay.
Can we keep the... All right, we have... Because I think he does like 4 more interviews with people. All of them humor him, and he pretty much schools them.
Oh, I'm in.
That's what I do.
I'm in.
So Muggs Explains Bees, part 2 next.
Hey, if you're just joining us, we are halfway through Beer Mug Explains Bees. He went down to a anti-pesticide protest at a hardware store in the Valley a couple weeks ago with Ian Ziering from Sharknado and his lovely wife, Erin. And so far, we've really heard very little from them, but a lot from Muggs. And now you're telling me he's let the celebrities go, and now he's just walking around just assaulting customers in the hardware store?
Just walking up to people who really don't care about bees and asking them if they're upset that bees are dying. And he is stuck on this. Without bees, you wouldn't have 2/3 of the food you eat. Mm-hmm. You'll see as we go along that Muggs doesn't know any more than that, except for that number. Like,
he doesn't know the actual foods?
No, God, no.
Oh.
No. He knows fruit in general. Just some fruit and honey. That's how he explains it. So he asks his first girl if she's upset about the bees dying.
Well, they're pretty important to our environment, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're responsible for about 2/3 of what we eat. So if they're gone, which is a result of all the pesticides that they put in all these pesticides, naturally. So do you like bees?
Yes.
That's right. They put pesticides in pesticides.
You then said
naturally, of course. What word were you looking for?
Chemicals.
Chemicals.
Yes.
Chemicals.
Yes.
They put the pesticides.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Didn't happen, but that's the word I was looking for.
That was the best thing I've ever heard. Oh. And then when he finally, he just gave up and just said.
So do you like bees?
You like them?
I guess.
She doesn't care. Nobody cares. That's the thing.
No.
Look, everybody has their pet project or whatever. Uh-huh. And right. I talk about my charity a lot, and other people have their charities a lot. Some charities are harder to talk about than others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad for people who love bees, like my friend Bean, who's going to be a beekeeper mm-hmm. one day.
I do love bees. And everything Ian is saying is true, by the way. And it really is a crisis that I'm glad he's putting on people's radar. But I don't know that Muggs is the guy to spread that word.
Well, that's the weird thing, is that once Muggs talked at Ian, he didn't listen, but he talked. Then he sort of took up the cause.
Yeah.
Like, now he's assaulting people, and he's upset that they're not upset about the bees dying.
It's so weird. If I could make just a larger macro point here, I always wonder how these assholes that join ISIS get indoctrinated. They're Muggs. Basically, they hear something one time and they go, all right, I'll do that.
I'll do
and then
it.
They just go out and they just start spreading the word. They just become that guy they just saw on TV talking for a minute.
Dare you!
All right, so here's Muggs talking to another guy who does not care. And this is the weird thing. Like, you have to assume people aren't going to care about bees if you want to tell them something about it. But Muggs has no interest in that. He's just going to shame them.
Excuse me, sir. Can I get your thoughts about all the honeybees dying off?
The honeybees dying off.
Yeah, they're all dying, and they're responsible for about 2/3 of what we eat, and they're a major part of our ecosystem.
Because global warming.
Could you elaborate?
It's getting hot.
How does Muggs bet his match? How does that guy bring in global warming? Elaborate. It's hot.
It's hot, right?
All right. This guy straight out hates
a game show. By the way,
this guy straight out hates bees, and Muggs is not going to have it.
Excuse me, sir. What do you think of all the honeybees dying off?
What?
What do you think of all the honeybees dying off?
I think that's great. I can't stand bees.
You know they're responsible for about 2/3 of what we eat.
I don't care. My girlfriend's allergic to them. She hates them, and I hate them.
But
okay. Now this is fascinating to me because he's not just saying okay, great, or whatever. Might I share? So mm-hmm. He's getting a little indignant.
Yeah, let me drop some knowledge on you. Change things.
Just
right?
Upset with
honeybees are very harmless. It's a common misconception. You know, they're not wasps or yellow jackets. They're honeybees. They're friendly.
They're stupid is what they are. They're stupid. Stupid bees.
Thank you, sir.
So, I got to give that round to the shoppers.
You gave up way too easy.
The amount of time from you're an idiot, I'm going to school you, to thank you, sir, is about 4 seconds.
Carry on.
The guy just had to say one more thing, and that's it.
I was done.
With you, Muggs. All right, so one more interview with somebody who doesn't care about bees.
Excuse me, sir, what are your thoughts about the honeybee population dying off?
It's terrible.
How so?
I mean, any population dying off is just really saddening to me. And the honeybees they make good honey.
That is a good point. Did you know that they're all...
They make good honey. That's a good point. How is that a good point? So this guy clearly doesn't know anything about the issue, except for that they make
good honey.
That is a good point. Did you know that they're also responsible for about 2/3 of what we eat?
2/3 of the food we eat, mm-hmm.
As well as honey?
Well, I don't eat bees, so I didn't know that.
Not eating bees, but
he's upset.
What they produce, we eat.
Oh, gotcha. They just make honey, as far as I'm concerned.
So you're neither here nor there. You don't care what happens to the bees. I mean, they do. They're a part of the ecosystem.
No, I didn't say that. I like the bees.
Oh.
I'm for the bees. You know, I'm all about them bees.
Can we hire that guy and fire Muggs?
How dare you?
I just think you're terrific.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It's Kevin and Bean Show at 11 minutes after 9. All banjos all the time. I think that's our stance on this program.
Certainly plenty of them in that song, that's for sure. Hey, congratulations to our latest winner of Night 1, K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas 2015 tickets and backstage passes. That is Olivia Romo from Cudahy. Cudahy? Cudahy.
I think it's Cudahy.
Cudahy? All right, fine. Cudahy. Thank you, Olivia, for... Now, Allie says it's Cudahy. Now what do I do? Kevin says Cudahy.
It's Olivia. Dave never clarifies things, so don't let's not go with that.
Anyway, congratulations, Olivia. Thank you so much for listening. Your chance to win is coming up here on the world-famous K-Rock. I thought this was really funny, you guys, and I don't know. I know it's been a long, long time. I don't know how long since we discussed this topic on the air, but there was a Reddit topic the other day. The question was thrown out, have you ever had to fire someone on their first day on the job? What did they do? And I love these stories. Here's one. He just got his logon credentials for the corporate Wi-Fi, and literally the first thing he did was try to get onto YouPorn.
Sure.
We've got a filter installed that shows a notification. This website is blocked for violation of company policies, which, by the way, we have here at CBS, much to our ultimate frustration. So he emails the department supervisor, who was me in this case. When YouPorn didn't work, he tried Pornhub, RedTube, and 20 other sites. Bye-bye. I mean, that's the first thing he did when he got his password. Is that hilarious?
It does seem like you have to really screw up to get fired on the first day. I mean,
yeah.
Most people, I would imagine, get called in maybe. They get warned. But the first day to say goodbye.
Because they cut you a lot of slack on your first day because you're brand new. You don't know how anything works. I worked for a trucking company. When you're hired, you do ride-alongs and tests and stuff until you're cleared to drive solo. Then you have to go at least 90 days without an accident or incident before you get fired. That's company policy. Well, this guy's first day solo, everything went well up to the point. He showed up ready to go, did his inspections, was all set, jumped in the cab, and then drove over the front flower bed, signed, and took out a retaining wall before careening across the highway and ending up in a ditch. Oops. He just hoofed it back across the road, got in his car, and left. So it sounds like maybe they didn't even have to fire him.
Wow.
Like he literally just drove home. Here's a little company espionage for you. My company had to have someone escorted out of the building within the first couple of hours of him starting because he cloned, zipped, and emailed himself all of our proprietary source codes.
What?
So that sounds like a guy who just really like took the job so he could rip off all their stuff. It goes on and on. We want your phone calls on this, by the way, at 1-800-520-1067. Have you ever had to fire somebody on the first day or been fired on the first day? When I worked in fast food, we cycled through employees on a weekly basis. The worst was a guy who on his first day asked for a smoke break and then went next door and tried to rob a bank. In his uniform. Is that insane?
That's great. That guy should have gotten a raise.
All right. Now, I'm going to ask you, Allie, if you had to guess who on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Come on.
Kevin.
Out of all
Kevin.
Of them. Hey, come
you
on.
Kevin.
You don't even know what the question's going
to
be.
It has to do with being fired on your first day, and it's Kevin.
All right. Is it Kevin?
I mean, maybe.
Maybe I was fired the first day.
Monkey,
what happened?
I got a job doing construction.
Okay.
All right. Got to pay the bills. Got to do whatever you got to do.
Sure.
So I show up on the site, and it's an apartment complex. Mm-hmm. And the guy says, here's a scraper. You have to scrape the cement off of all of the floors of the apartments. And every apartment is identical, and there's like 250 of them.
That sounds like steady work. At least you know you're going to have a job to come back to weeks to come.
Such BS. So the boss goes, so I'm leaving. So you guys just, you know, do this. You could clock out at such and such. And you know, I'll check in tomorrow and see how things are going. So as soon as he left, I was like, I'm not doing this. This sucks. So we started playing a baseball game inside one of the apartments with a 2x4 and duct tape, a duct tape baseball.
Sure.
And we had a home plate and first, second, third. And we had a whole game going on. I was ahead. I was very happy about that. And the boss came right. I mean, it was like an hour after. He said he was not coming back. So I put that on him.
He's the dick, for sure.
So he came in and saw all of us playing this baseball game in one of the apartments and fired us all that second.
Is that why you hate baseball?
No, that was the best part of my day right there. And it got me out of that job. That job was going to blow.
Had you gotten away with it, let's say the boss hadn't come back, Kevin, and you would have been able to play that game of baseball, what was your plan? Were you going to at some point go back to work, or was your plan you were going to quit?
I don't remember. I imagine I probably would have gone back and said, let's blow through like 10 of them and get them done quickly, and then we'll do whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like a reward.
You were cutting corners even at a young age.
Well, come on. I mean, it was like 250 apartments, and they were all identical. So you'd scrape one, and then you go to the next one, there's cement everywhere. You go, no! This is BS!
1-800.
Let's play a game.
520-1067. Let's take one call real quick before the break. Let's make it our friend Nick. He's on line two, and he joins us on the Kevin DeBeach Show. Hey, Nick. Thanks for calling, man. How are you?
Hey, Nick.
Yeah.
Oh, hi there. How are you?
Yeah. You got fired on the first day? What happened?
Oh, yeah. Hey. Yeah, I got fired two times on the first day. One, when I was 17, my girlfriend, she got me a job at Luigi's Pizza. And I was stoked because I needed the money.
Right.
And then we just got caught in the freezer together. And they fired both of us. I think she was, on thin ice anyway, but I don't know. But
wait,
yeah, we both
hold on
got
a second.
Fired.
Why were you guys in the freezer? You ducked in there to eat pizza?
She went in to get the sausage.
In
your defense, it was cold. It was shrinkage. I understand.
The other time, I went down to Australia for the Olympics to volunteer. It's the opposite, right? You know that. So it's like, you know, in December, it's hot there. It's the summer.
Right.
July
seasons,
here.
Sure.
Yes.
And so the Olympics were on, but it was in December. So okay. I'm standing, and this guy is like a
good
total
point.
Jerk to me. And he's like, you have to stand here in the sun, you know, in his Australian accent. And then I'm all, no, I'm going to stand over here in the shade. And we just didn't get along, and that was it. I volunteered for about 6 hours, and that was the end of that.
Well, at least you went all the way to Australia for that job, so that worked out well for you. All right, thank you, Nick. Well done, sir.
Is this Tommy Lee?
Yeah, boy.
1-800-520-1067. You got fired on the first day, or someone was fired where you work on the first day. We'll take your calls next time, K-Rock. Talking about getting fired on the first day, I knew our listeners would be all over this, by the way, including this one, Na, who writes in on the Kevin DeBean Twitter account. I had to fire someone as soon as I hired him. We had just finished the interview. I welcomed him aboard. I asked for his ID and social information to fax over to corporate, get his paperwork completed, and a sack of weed and a little meth fell out of his pocket. I just looked at him, and he looked back at me and said, I didn't get the job, did I? I shook my head, and he just walked out. So close to full employment there. All right, let's talk to our man Steven. He's in Garden Grove. He's up first. We're taking your calls on this topic at 1-800-520-1067. Hi, Steven. Thank you for calling. Thank you for holding on. What happened, man?
Hey, guys. Sure thing. So basically, I used to work in this warehouse, also in Garden Grove, and this kid comes in on the first day. He was just hired on. And everything's normal. You know, we go through the first 2 hours of the shift, and then our break hits. And immediately, the first thing he does is climb up on a stack of pallets and do a backflip off of it.
Okay.
And then he starts going around the warehouse doing different, acrobatic stunts. Like, he gets on our three-story high paper pallets, does a plank. He wanted one of my other friends, lift him up onto all the way up on a forklift and, do, I don't know, calisthenics on it or something. And,
what the hell was going on?
I don't know, but as soon as our supervisor saw this, he's just like, this guy's got to go. That's not safe. It's a 3-month probationary period. And, I mean, I don't think he realizes the severity of being safe in a warehouse with, two-story conveyors in it, you know?
Yeah. It doesn't sound like he's taking that part of the job very seriously. That's funny for being fired for doing acrobatics, though. I've never heard of that before.
Sounds like a parkour guy who just needed a steady gig.
Yeah. But as soon as he did that backflip off the pallet, my friends and I just started dying.
I love this guy.
That's awesome.
Hey, guys, watch me do another one.
Thank you so much, Steven. Let's go to Justin out in Ontario. He's on line six, please. Justin, you had to do some firing on day one. How come?
I hired you guys working at a fast food restaurant at the time, and I was showing them how to work the grill. And on the sides of the grill, there's these grease catches, catch all the nasty stuff that falls off the burgers. And we had a container that you dump all the old grease in. So I told him to do that, and I walked away for 2 seconds. And I guess he interpreted that he had to put it on the grill or something like that. And I guess it started popping up everywhere and caught the whole building on fire.
He put the grease back on the grill?
On the grill.
And how much damage was done to the restaurant? You said the whole place caught on fire?
About half the building.
Oh, my God.
I'll bet that looked pretty cool, though. I love fire.
No, Kevin.
No, I love fire. What?
Plus, we got a couple weeks off paid, so wasn't all too bad.
See? All right,
I mean,
there you go.
Everyone wins.
Exactly. All right, sir, thanks for the call. Let's go to Riverside now. Talk to Trent. He's up next on line five. Hi, Trent. Were you the firer or the firee this time?
No, I actually know somebody who was fired. I was working at John Wayne Airport at the time. I was working at one of the food concessions inside, and on one of the days that I was leaving, I left at like about 12 o'clock. There was a guy who was coming in. He just finished orientation. He was just waiting for a security clearance to check. And so I was talking with him, giving him the lowdown on what he needed to do. So a week goes by, and I'm leaving work, and I remember that it was this guy's first day, and he was coming in on the later shift when I was leaving. So I go outside, and I see him sitting down outside the checkpoint surrounded by cops. I'm thinking, what the hell did this guy do? Come in the next day, find out that he tried to bring in a gun into the airport, not realizing that we had to pass through security just like everybody else.
Why would he need a gun?
Did you ever know why?
I'd never asked. Like I said, I met him for like a couple minutes as I was leaving about a week before.
Right.
So I barely even remember the dude's name. All I remember was just like, you had to have been a colossal idiot to think you would get away with that.
Bringing a gun to the airport.
Yeah, most people don't think airport is the place I need to bring a gun. That's for sure. All right, thank you for the call, sir. Hey, going back to this this Reddit thread that started the whole topic, I love this one. Here's a guy who screwed up the entire delivery schedule. He's a truck driver. He doesn't answer his radio. When they finally got a hold of him, he said, "Oh, yeah, I was going through town, and there was an all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet for $3.95. I couldn't pass up a deal like that. I turned off my radio while I was eating." That was on his first day on the job. He turned off his radio in his delivery truck and had Chinese.
And that guy's name was Beer Mug.
It might have been Beer Mug. All right. A new Miss Double December contestant. We have not yet met in person. She is the lovely Shauna. She is looking for your votes at KevinandBean.com if you want to check her out. We will talk to her and meet her next right after this on K-Rock. The Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock has been the site of a lot of magical musical performances over the past few years since it was built. And another one's going to be happening this Thursday afternoon. The group Imagine Dragons is going to be stopping by, and they're going to be performing live. How many people, Kevin, you think we usually get in that room when a band comes by to play?
I mean, maybe 100?
Yeah.
Maybe?
The furthest person away from the band is like 25 feet. I mean, it's a small room. And if you'd like to be there, we are looking for Imagine Dragons fans right now at 1-800-520-1067. You will have to earn your way in, and you will have to earn your way in the most painful way possible. But we'll be playing the game in a couple of minutes if you want to call right now. Good luck.
All right, let's talk about this strange village in Kazakhstan. They say it's a mysterious Kazakhstan village because the people there keep falling asleep. And they fall asleep for between like 6 to 12 hours to 6 days sometimes.
I remember us talking about this a few months ago. They have been investigating this for a long time. It's like a real-life village of the Walking Dead where people just are walking down the street and fall down and just fall asleep. But now, Kevin, you have unearthed some more details that it goes far beyond just naps.
Well, I mean, they were trying to figure out what causes it, why, and their hallucinations. They're walking around with, it says in the story, erections for long amounts of time.
Even the women.
When they wake up.
So crazy.
The women have boners. That's weird.
So part of the deal is for the men, they fall asleep and then they wake up and they're as horny as they've ever been.
Yes.
They have to have sex and they have to have sex now.
And that's not good for anyone.
No. No, it's not. So they're in the process of moving a bunch of these families out. They say the conclusion they have come to is that it is carbon monoxide poisoning. Apparently, there's some sort of uranium mine, and it's filled up with water, and it's mixed with chemicals or something like that. But it's basically poisoning the air with carbon monoxide, which is why they had these problems for so long. So we asked Dave, is there anyone on the ground that we can talk to? And I believe we have Dr. Boris Pavlenko, who joins us here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
We had him 30 seconds ago.
We no longer have Mr. Pavlenko.
He fell asleep, apparently. Drop
right,
the phone.
We'll try to give him a call back.
This is awesome, by the way. Can you imagine living in a town where people sleep for days and they don't know why?
Like, to me, it sounded like college because dudes were just sleeping for days on end, waking up with erections. But this is serious. This is bad.
And the hallucinations, too, by the way. Which this affects everybody, including little kids who are just seeing horrible demons. You know, I mean, it sounds like a nightmare kind of place to live.
All right, I think we have Dr. Boris back on the phone.
Dr. Pavlenko, how are you, sir?
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling and for talking with me on the radio this day.
Well, we're very pleased to see it. Sounds like they may have diagnosed the problems there in the so-called Sleepy Hollow.
Yes, for the longest time, as you can imagine, was a perplexing problem for not knowing why people would be reacting in such a way.
Yeah, I mean, you're just going about your day, and the next thing you know, you're sound asleep. It could be 3, 4, 5 days before you wake up, and then it sounds like you're just a horn dog afterwards.
Yes, many different situations resulting from what was happening in this town with the sleeping, of course, and as you mentioned, the sexual arousal, but also hallucinations from children and also bizarre behavior from older people screaming curse words at each other and fighting. Oh. And it was a confusing situation for everyone here, not knowing why it's going to happen. And we're glad finally to be at the end result in a now more understanding way.
Okay, but now that you know it's from the mind, what do you do?
Well, of course, we must vacate this location and make everyone for now to be moving to another place for to have to live.
Yes, apparently the government is pitching in and they're giving money to help families move. 68 of the 223 families in the village have already been moved, and the rest are supposed to be relocated by the end of the year. So I guess your little village there is just going to be a ghost town.
Yes, unfortunately, it was uranium mine underneath town that was releasing dangerously high levels of carbon monoxide gas and making the poisoning situation and environment for everyone to be living. So we...
Doctor. Dr. Pavlenko? Geez. Oh, no.
Doctor?
This is bad timing.
Oh.
Hey, what's your name? Hey, who's this on the phone?
Allie, I think this one's for you.
Hi, Doctor. We're...
Hey, whatever with you, lady. Who's the guy with the deep voice?
That's Kevin.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
I'm good.
Hey, what are you wearing,
How are
Kevin?
You?
Doctor, can we get back to the interview about the carbon monoxide, please?
Or anything else?
Omar, why are you laughing so much?
Wait, who? Wait, there's a guy named Omar there?
Yes, one of my assistants in the laboratory is named Omar.
That's weird.
Hey, he's looking pretty good right now, too.
Yeah, he is. Oh, no. Here we go again.
No.
Boy, it just comes out of nowhere, man. It just lays you out.
What? Hey, it's party time in my pants. Who wants some?
All right. I guess it's time for this top 10. Right?
We got to do it. Every year, near the end of the show, we take a look back and we do the top 10 Omar intros, the top 10 moments with, you know, a whole bunch of categories. Beer mug interview moments. This, I got to be honest, my least favorite. But I'm strapped
in. Ours too. Ours too. But it has to be done.
I'm strapped in. I'm ready to go. Hit it, Steve. A little harsh
like
for a guy
that.
Who's really just tweeting.
Yeah, but
no,
you shouldn't be.
I'm not killing.
You're
I'm
not just a guy that's just tweeting.
I'm just typing and putting it on the internet. That's not a suck thing.
You know what? It's just a hammer, too. Until you start taking it to people's heads, then it becomes a deadly weapon.
It's how it's used, Bean.
So how was your research time on this project, Ralph?
It was brutal. I've just spent months poring over every bad tweet, and I think we have a pretty good representation of the 10 worst Bean tweets for 2015.
That's that tweet. Bean!
All right.
Hey, we are teachers. Hate to correct your paper, but what just ended is daylight saving time, never savings. It's standard time now.
Well, that is my busiest weekend.
That's that tweet.
Of the year when we make the time change transition. You know that, right?
We don't need clarification.
Got to do my part.
We need to have that represented, and also that what needed to be represented in this batch.
No need to to choose. You can commemorate Memorial Day today and also celebrate 5/12 Christmas, too. Happy holiday.
I like to keep people updated on the progress of the holiday season.
Hey, Bean.
What?
We don't need further clarification.
Okay.
And 12th Christmas isn't a thing.
It is a thing.
No, it isn't.
It is a thing. It's gaining momentum every single year. You're starting to see half Christmas stuff a lot now, and that's just the beginning. It's only a matter of time before 5/12.
That's that tweet.
Bean! What was that one song where the person loves someone? Do you know? I need to find it.
Because there are a lot of love songs in the world.
Too many.
Couldn't pin that down.
Come on.
Not enough information.
By the way, Ralph Alley is laughing at every one of these.
Yeah, well, she being Wood.
That's that
tweet.
Bean! The New York Times obituaries are the hottest obituaries.
That's just true. They do such a great job. They're a pleasure to read.
We don't need clarification.
You compare the New York Times obits with anybody else.
That tweet.
Okay. Bean!
Then Bean took a trip to Barcelona this year, and this tweet came from when he was in Barcelona.
There's no microwave where I'm staying. So I just ate a piece of cold pizza, and now I know what the cavemen felt like.
Because they didn't have a way to heat up their food before they came up with the fire thing.
No,
just say it. It's like caveman days. That was a prehistoric meal, man. It sucked.
Number
that
tweet.
Bean.
Number 5.
To my friends still in classic radio... Don't forget, it's 2 for Tuesday. And to my friends in classic rock radio, it's 2 for Tuesday.
Listen to Allie.
Because
Allie is Bean's audience.
You say it twice because...
That's that tweet.
Bean!
It's 2 for Tuesday they play two songs from the same artist. Thank you, Ralph. Yeah. You get it.
They don't need clarification.
It's never a question of getting it or not.
It's a question of ignoring it.
Every time my rental car GPS announces, you have arrived, I high-five myself. Hashtag swag, swag, swag.
By the way, Bean is laughing harder than Allie.
It's just
Bean is the audience for Bean. Yeah, that's why.
It's just nice to get some positive reinforcement.
We
a little confirmation in your life.
We don't need clarification.
That's that
tweet.
Bean!
A feel-good tweet is all.
Number 3, this has a little photo element to it. Oh. It was a photograph that Bean took of a painting of salt and pepper shakers. Okay? A painting of salt and pepper shakers on the wall.
Seeing this on the wall makes me want to push it.
It was
go right to hell.
It was a pun.
That's that tweet.
Bean.
Song from a
That's
musical
that
tweet.
Bean. That's
that tweet.
Bean.
Bean has really upped his photo to tweet ratio this year.
Oh.
Yet another at number 2. It is a picture of an Asian restaurant. They serve food cooked in woks.
Okay.
And the name of the restaurant is Wok Show. That was the photograph. And here is the accompanying tweet.
Hey, Mark Hoppus, is this where you got the idea for that song?
It's a walk
That's
show.
Tweet.
Bean.
Walk it's show. Walk show. Blink 182 had a song
we
called Walk Show.
Get it. And don't like it.
And number 1.
How do you choose, seriously?
Another photo tweet combo. This was a picture of a gallon of milk that had hit the floor and spilled.
Sorry. Wrong button. Sorry.
Why did we just play Chewbacca? Why would you play Chewbacca?
Because I was trying to hit the timpani again and my hand slipped. I'm sorry, Ralph. I didn't mean to screw that up. So it was the gallon of milk on the floor. Go ahead.
There was a gallon of milk that spilled on the floor.
This is happening at my house right now. But I can't remember if I'm allowed to cry over it or not.
Yay! Oh, the kids enjoyed the heck out of that one.
Oh, f*** you.
Those were the top 10 B tweets in
I don't think this is necessary at all, Ralph, what you're about to do.
It's the march to the Hall of Fame.
Wow, yeah, you got to get some echo on that.
I asked for it before we started the segment, but once again, the Hall of Fame quality of broadcasting that it is, I was let down.
Here's what I'm saying, Ralph, is when they give an honorary award, a lifetime achievement award, say, at the Oscars,
mm-hmm.
they don't look for that actor's worst ever performances and edited together in a montage. They forget about that, and they just spotlight the good stuff. I feel like you're going the opposite way for us.
What?
I would beg to differ.
I don't think he's the reverb now. No, just...
I'm saying that you guys are rightly headed into the Hall of Fame at the National Association of Broadcasters. Tomorrow, the Hall of Fame acceptance and ceremony will be held. And I think it's well-deserved. And I think these are just 10 examples of how, throughout the years, you guys have all done exemplary work.
I doubt your sincerity, but I'm willing to listen.
You deserve this accolade as we take the march to the Hall of Fame.
There it is.
There we go. Let's start with number 10. Well, this is just before the legendary Kevin and Bean Underwater Show. This is a show where Kevin and Bean put on scuba suits and went underwater and broadcast their radio show from underwater.
Which was... Off the coast of Catalina. I think it would have been probably around 1991, maybe? 92, maybe?
Yes.
Which was 99% just the sound of us breathing.
Yes. In lieu of content, Kevin and Bean used to try to come up with the wackiest stunt they could, and this one was them doing a show underwater, mm-hmm. which really offered nothing of value other than hearing them breathe and a very annoying, echoey sound. But before they went underwater, they talked to James Cameron, the director of the movie The Abyss, because, and I can only assume, The Abyss also takes place underwater. There's the connection.
If I had to guess, because I don't remember, you're probably right about that, yeah.
Here's the interview.
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. Now, are you the guy that directed The Abyss?
Yes.
That's pretty interesting. We're standing here right now. We've got our wetsuits on. We got our weight belts on. We've got harnesses on for tanks. We've got our booties on, and I wish we could come up with a more masculine name for these little shoes that we have to wear.
Yeah, they're booties.
And I guess we're going through what your actors and actresses went through making that movie every day. I mean, it's an all-day job just getting set to do something, isn't it?
Well, you know, we used to say, life's abyss, then you dive.
Thank you.
By the way, we're
going through what your actors probably went through when they made their movie, because it takes a long time to put these suits on. That was on the radio.
Especially these little shoes.
These booties.
I'm not defending the question at all, but how great of James Cameron to waste his time talking to us.
He regretted it immediately upon getting on the phone.
You know that's true of most people.
The interviews of the Kevin and Bean show throughout the years really are remarkable, and the quality has always been high. I use this example, number 9, in the March to the Hall of Fame of the interview with Al the Bedspread King. Al Greenwood, the king of bedspreads. Al apparently would run ads in the Sunday LA Times where he would also give some opinions about the current day's events. And in this particular case, he was upset with the little sports cars, how they drove on the freeway. And Kevin and Bean, once again, I think in lieu of anything else to do on the radio, decided to call him up and see what his problem was with sports cars. So here's their edgy interview with Al Greenwood, the king of bedspreads.
Al Greenwood?
Hello, Al. This is Kevin and Bean.
I can hear you, but... You're not very strong. I don't know. What's the matter?
Oh, I think...
You want me to call you?
Can we just ask you a couple of questions?
Yeah.
Al, you own a carpet store, is that right?
Can we hold on a second? He's Al Greenwood, the king of bedspreads.
Right.
So Bean asks him, so Al, you own a carpet store there, do you? Do you own a carpet store? Al, the king of bedspreads? Is it a carpet store that you own?
Could I have been kidding?
I don't believe so. I
think technically it's possible.
Sure, of course. I guess anything is possible.
Yeah. Can I continue?
Yeah, please do.
No, we have a bedspread store, the largest bedspread store in the whole United States.
And we were going through the Los Angeles Times and we saw your ad.
About the cars?
Yeah, can you explain to us what the heck that means and how it has to do anything
with... You know, we've got such a bad connection. Can I call you back? Maybe we'll have a better connection.
call. The connection is fine. Please play along.
Not a strong connection, but I could hear you.
It goes on talking about the connection for another hour and a half, 2 hours, it feels like. I'm not sure exactly in real time.
I feel like that still happens.
But Kevin pulled out a bullhorn. It was a very funny bullhorn segment happened there during that.
We used to use the bullhorn a lot, didn't we?
Well, you sure did. And that's why you are on
the March to the Hall of Fame.
Because you talked to a guy who owned a bedspread store.
But that's it. That's
and had a poor connection with him. But you had used a bullhorn and talked loudly to him for an extended period of time.
Is that only 2 of 10?
Then there was an ongoing segment where Bean would go on his crappy vacations, and we know how crappy his vacations were. But when he came back from those crappy vacations, they would do the hilarious Bean slideshow where they would pretend to watch slides on the radio, and you, the fine listener, would not be able to see the slides because that's a visual thing. So they would describe what the slides were. Please enjoy Bean's trip to Idaho.
All right. Go ahead. First slide, cows. A lot of cows in Idaho. I took pictures of most of them, but I'm only going to show you some of the better ones.
Those are cows.
A lot of cows.
All right, let's go to another slide.
These are all way out of order now from the last slideshow, by the way. Welcome to Blackfoot, the potato capital of the world.
Oh. Yeah.
There's a little sign there with a spud with a crown on it.
It's a sign with a potato with a crown.
Now, this is outside the Idaho Potato Expo. That's Donna and me in front of the world's largest cement potato.
What kind of a category is that?
World's largest cement potato. Notice it's got sour cream on the top of it.
Very nice touch.
I thought that was nice.
Yeah.
There's Kevin and Bean along with Jenny McCarthy, the Playmate of the Year.
Oh, yeah. See, that's a photo right there, everybody.
Now we're talking.
Now we're getting somewhere. That's from last week.
Stacy, this one's for you. That's actually Donna, my wife, and I in front of the world's largest potato chip inside the museum. Isn't that beautiful?
Well, it's not really beautiful. It's about the size of a medium pizza, so how impressive can that be?
That What's was your point? On the radio.
What's your point? What are you trying
What's
to say?
What's my point? Yes. What's my point? You have a ball
the message
to ask me what my point is. I would, in fact, turn that question around, sir, and ask you if you could please inform all of us what your point was.
Just trying to share some vacation fun, I guess, probably.
Allie, you joined this show way too late.
I don't think so.
It's the march to the Hall of Fame.
How about the time Kevin and Bean took us behind the iron curtain of hot dog on a stick and taught us how one works and learns how to work at hot dog on a stick? Haven't you always wondered? No, of course you haven't, but you got it anyway.
You can start cutting some lemons over
These
here.
These are white trash cans.
Kevin, I'll actually do the recording. You do the actual cutting.
Oh, absolutely. How do I do this now?
Just over here.
Come over here? I'm sorry, I'm not in the right position.
This booth is about screwed up. 6 by 9, and there's you and me and 8 women.
Right? Oh, wow. Like this?
Yeah. These are
special. Come on, everybody.
Look at that. He did one.
This one?
Hey, my good friend.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
My good friend, Kevin.
What?
You and the girls look like you're doing some sort of weird satanic dance.
You deadly F word. I don't care what Hall of Famer, and you can't say that on the radio.
But it needed to be said, right?
You were cutting lemons to make lemonade for hot dog on a stick. But you know what was really good radio, I think, is just the fact that everyone was screaming and yelling things at the same time. That's what made it fun for the listener.
All right, we're out of time.
No, we're not.
We are. We actually have to take a break.
You went to, we got 6 more.
Okay,
we'll do one more, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back with the top 5.
All right.
Most people went to Indio this past weekend for Coachella.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Bean went to Indio to bring you, the fine listener, the story of Shields Date Garden, the biggest date farm in Indio, and the story of the movie that shows you how dates are made.
You making this up?
You think I'm kidding.
I hope you're kidding.
I am not. You interviewed the owner of a date farm in Indio and then sat in the theater watching the movie about dates, microphoning the film itself, making commentary about dates.
The date is perhaps the oldest known cultivated tree crop and one of the least written about and the least understood of all fruits produced.
Wonder why that is.
It flourished throughout the ages from northwest India through southwest Asia and across northern Africa.
We're looking at a slide of a field.
The commercial date came to our desert from these faraway lands a little over 50 years ago.
Still looking at that same slide.
Of the 119 kinds of dates grown in Shields Date Gardens, only one variety was imported from the old world.
Change the slide.
The other 118 kinds were originated here. Shields Date Garden. And in all that time, I've never been able to get up in the morning and say, thank goodness, we have nothing to do today. 25 of the palms around this building are original importations from Algeria. Our original date garden can be seen just beyond one of our grapefruit and tangerine plantings.
Focus!
It may interest you to know that this date sells for 5 cents each, one to a customer.
Why, is there going to be a rush?
To point up its delicious goodness.
Hey, where's the sex part?
Here's what I'll say about that. That's an interminable clip. How long was the actual?
Four, five times the length of that.
How
easily,
is that possible? Easily. That was an hour.
Do you not remember any of this, Kevin?
I remember vaguely. Some of it.
You sat in a movie theater at a date farm critiquing the movie about the history of dates and then aired that on the radio.
How do they keep inviting us back to do more shows?
I can only imagine there were only two stations in Los Angeles when this was going on.
Look.
When we return, we will continue on.
Oops.
The march to the Hall of Fame.
Look, here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Most morning shows start in other markets and work all of this bad crap out in smaller markets where no one cares.
I see. They moved to Los Angeles and are good.
They hired us here when hadn't even had a show yet, so we were learning here.
I understand, but you had heard radio before, right? If you hadn't done it, you had heard radio. You understand how sound works, right? That much was established. You had heard other people do radio. You weren't raised by indigenous people in a forest somewhere. You knew. You've heard of radio at this point.
I'm going to go drop in a forest.
I think part of it also, and if you're just joining us, by the way, Ralph is mocking us.
I'm not.
You're mocking.
To the Hall of Fame. Right.
Tomorrow we get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
And rightly
ceremony
so.
In Las Vegas. And Ralph is, I think, presenting a fairly strong case that that award is a mistake.
I am not at all saying you guys deserve every bit of it, because this is innovative stuff.
Let me also throw this out, and I don't know if this holds any water or not, but we were also trying to do something different from the shows they were on at that time. That was the era of Rick Dees and of Jay Thomas and Mark and Brian and people like that who were doing one kind of show. And I think we were just trying to zag a little bit. I think that was where we were headed.
So they were doing entertainment.
That's right. They were doing popular things that got them ratings.
They were doing things that people enjoyed. And you said, we're going to sit in a movie theater and watch a movie about dates. And then comment on a movie that you can't see.
Exactly.
That's what you did. Well, so that's why you're going into the Hall of Fame.
Where are we on this this terrible list of top ten?
Well, once again, this must be a zag to someone else's zig when you, for Halloween, you guys created an original episode of Scooby-Doo featuring the voices of Casey Kasem as Shaggy and Dawes Butler, I guess, as Scooby-Doo himself.
Now, that sounds pretty ambitious and potentially good.
It is ambitious.
It is very ambitious. Sadly, though, you two have to act in it.
Yeah.
And so, well, I'll let the clip speak for itself.
Hey, look, Kevin, it's TV's Scooby-Doo and Shaggy, Hanna-Barbera's cartoon legends.
Excuse me, sir, like our wheels just broke down and we were wondering if we could use your phone and, maybe get some food?
Sure, guys, come on in.
Hey, like, this is a groovy pad. Do you guys live here?
No, we don't. It's Halloween, you see, and we're here because we hear that this castle is haunted.
We heard that on Halloween, every year, a retired sea captain who used to live here comes back from the dead.
He died 30 years ago, and no one has ever lived here since.
Good story, Wayne.
Not really.
I think we did that in front of a movie theater.
No, I think it was the Jetsons, when you did the Jetsons episode. I didn't have time for everything of all the clips I should be playing. So there was a Scooby-Doo episode and a Jetsons episode. I had to go with Scooby-Doo.
But the Jetsons was probably better.
It was worse. But I tried to give you the benefit of the doubt by playing the Scooby-Doo, because we had played the Jetsons
before. But we don't
get any
kind of credit for doing a Scooby-Doo episode with the great Casey Kasem, though? That's pretty
They sounded great. Casey Kasem sounded great.
Yeah, we sound pretty bad.
All right.
There was another ongoing segment back in the day on the Kevin and Bean Show called Celebrity Refrigerator, where Kevin and Bean would go to celebrities' homes and look through their refrigerators. But at least they got the best of the best. It was the highest caliber of celebrity, like this sample, Phyllis Diller. Comedian Phyllis Diller was paid a visit by Kevin and Bean, and they got a chance to go into her red kitchen and her red refrigerator and see what she had inside.
Kind of a big moment.
This is a big moment. We're opening it up, aren't we?
It's bright red.
Okay. Chili with beans, chili without beans.
Your name is right on there.
Well, my picture, too. And sometimes it keeps people from buying it.
Well.
But it's marvelous chili. It's in the stores here and in the Carolinas.
What would we have to do to talk you into a couple of cans of that we could give away on the air?
Oh, absolutely. You got it.
Really?
Absolutely.
Great.
Superb. You got it.
We'll give away Phyllis Diller's chili. Yes.
You guys were able to give away Phyllis Diller chili on the air?
Was everybody able to do that?
Did the phone banks just explode with people desperate to get a can of Phyllis Diller chili?
I wish I remembered any of this stuff ever happening before, Ralph.
We've
interviewed so many people
what
who
happened?
Are now dead, by the way.
Yeah. Phyllis Diller, by the way, I believe she was dead when you interviewed her.
That could be.
Before,
that's what I'm noticing about
there.
These clips is how many dead people are involved in them. Wow.
Speaking of dead people, when the rest of the world was mourning the fact that sainted lady Mother Teresa was on her deathbed. Mm-hmm. She, of course, one of the great...
champions of the poor.
Champions of the poor, but also in terms of healing the sick and administering to the lepers. I mean, she was a woman of unique spiritual capacity. So Kevin and Bean took it upon themselves to call the convalescent home in Calcutta where she was dying.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh,
yes.
No.
And proceed to mock the
Please,
fact that
no.
she was on her deathbed and ask if they could send her some Kevin and Bean gravy.
Oh, no. I remember Kevin being gravy.
Do you remember calling the convalescent home where she was on a respirator with her heart failing and you asking if you could send her some gravy because that might cheer her up? Mother Teresa? Mother Teresa, by the way.
No, I don't.
You know who Mother Teresa is, though, right?
Yeah.
You know what she accomplished in her lifetime.
Yeah.
You think she deserved a couple chuckleheads calling her up at the hospital to see if she wanted some gravy?
How do you know? Maybe she wanted
Hall
baby.
Of fame. Here's the clip.
All right. Woodlands Nursing Home, Calcutta. This also will double as a birthday gift for her.
Imagine being the doctor. Of...
Hello, Woodlands.
Hello, is this the Woodlands
Hello?
Nursing... Hello?
Is this the Hello? Woodlands Nursing Home in Calcutta?
Calcutta, yes.
Yes. Do you speak English?
Yes.
Great. We are calling from America. How are you?
Hello.
Yes. Is it possible to...
Yes, you want to know the condition of mother?
Yes.
Yes.
Please hold on. I give the line to the reception.
All right. Thank you very much.
They have a special Mother Teresa hotline.
Isn't that something?
Wow.
I called her 1-900-SEX-LINE
Hello?
Once. Not that good.
Please hold on.
Hello?
Hello. Yes. Do you speak English?
Yes.
We're calling from America. How is Mother Teresa?
Uh-huh.
How is Mother Teresa?
Mother Teresa is fully conscious today.
Great.
She's being... Hello?
Yes,
yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, we're
She's
here.
Being intermittent. Hello?
Yes, yes. We are here. Go ahead. Is it possible to send anything to her?
Pardon?
We would like to send her some Kevin and Bean gravy.
Just a minute.
Would she enjoy gravy?
Yeah, she was on a ventilator, by the way. And,
no,
her heart was being
please no
regulated by paddles that they were using.
I know Ralph is great at voices, but he doctors up these tapes to sound just like us.
Now that was for real. But at least it had the classic Kevin and Bean touch of you guys screaming at someone in a foreign country
and then
not being able to hear them. That was always my favorite part of every segment where you would call overseas. Do you speak English? Was always the opening salvo. And then there was a lot of, hello, yes, do you hear us? There's a lot of that going on.
But we're done now, right?
Well, I don't want everyone to think that the glory days of Kevin and Bean, that you're getting the Hall of Fame award for your work in the distant past.
Right.
I mean, let's not forget that Kevin hung up on one of the most famous people in the world, Beatle Paul McCartney.
Just, he sure
did. Just mere months ago.
Really nice interview. So, I hope to see you at the gig.
Absolutely, sir. Thanks for the call.
Let's make it a date.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Bye. Oops.
You hung up on Paul McCartney.
Well, he was saying goodbye.
Maybe you should have offered him some gravy.
By the way, the government shut us down on the gravy. We couldn't give it away.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sure Mother Teresa missed out by not being able to get some gravy.
She might still be alive today.
On her deathbed. And, of course, the number one moment, I think this is what they really took into account when they entered Kevin Bean into the Hall of Fame.
You got to give me some heads up.
Where do you think I was going to say enter into? What do you think I was going to say? Enter into a phone booth? Enter into a Sizzler restaurant? What do you think you're going to be entered into tomorrow? What was your guess? There was a thing that went on in a place called Fremont, South Dakota every year where they would celebrate something called Schmeckfest. And for some reason, Kevin and Bean went there to broadcast live. But before they did that, they came up with their own original theme song that was written by them but sung by a legendary performer, Tony Orlando. He's no Phyllis Diller, but I give you the theme from Schmeckfest.
Gather round, boys and girls, and listen. You know that Schmeckfest is a special time each year. Kevin and Bean will be in Fremont, South Dakota, to meet those East German chicks and drink some beer. There'll be lots of screaming men and women and children. There will be sauerkraut and awkward dilly mentioned beer.
Whoa, baby!
Thank you, our special new friend, Tony Orlando.
No problem.
For helping K-Rock celebrate Schmeckfest this year.
Schmeckfest! Hall of Fame! Hall of Fame! Hall of Fame! Hall of Fame!
We'll see you at the ceremony, Ralph.
I don't know how to...
Let's call India. Let's see if anybody else is sick over there. We can get a hold of, offer them some gravy.
I'm sure took the air out of this show with those clips.
Right? I beg to differ. There are people, Kyle Fisher right now just tweeting me, please never end this segment. He would like to continue on. I have about 20 more clips if you want to go through those.
I wish we had time.
I had to sift through about 30 of them in order to find those 10.
Hey, our friend Steve Aoki joins us in studio coming up next half hour here on the Kevin and Bean Show. And the beautiful actress Marina Baccarin from Gotham is going to be here as well. So good stuff on the way. Rob is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Monday. What's going on?
Are you going to interview her underwater?
I don't think so.
Or are you
going
to do it above water? Maybe we should take her to a date farm.
Come on.
Magic.
Come on. Last night on the CW was the beginning of the crossover event you have been waiting for between The Flash and The Arrow on CW and setting up the DC's Legends of Tomorrow show for next year. We couldn't be more excited to welcome Hawkman himself, Falk Henschel, in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Falk, how are you, man?
Hey, guys. I'm really good. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. You know, we've been hearing so much about Hawkman from our friend Ralph, who you met in the other room. This is something that lots of people... grew up loving, and they just can't believe the time is finally here in the world where he exists on our television sets.
I'm excited people got to see it, and I think it came out really fun, and I hope people keep enjoying him.
How do they do such a great... This is going to sound like a dumb question, but I'm really intrigued because this material would be easy to make cheesy and awful. How do they do such a great job on those shows like The Flash and The Arrow of keeping it grounded in characters and making you really believe in these people and care about these people? I mean, it really is such excellent television.
Well, I think there's a mix between the writing, the cast, and the trust between the one another. Like, I think the cast does such a great job, and I think the writers... are really collaborative, which I think is really important for this, and let everybody bring what they think of the character to it.
Collaborative with actors, though? Do actors know anything?
Not really. No, you're right.
Tell us about your character. For those, like, I'm not familiar with Hawkman.
Hawkman, a.k.a. Carter Hall, he's been around for about 4,000 years, 206 lifetimes, and he is tethered to Ciara Renee's character, Kendra Saunders, Hawk Girl. They're lovers through eternity, and they're reincarnated to find each other again and again.
That old story.
And, well, the dynamic that I think is fun is that they're like, I describe him as a bickering couple because Carter is just like, yeah, no, I'm in love with you and you love me and you'll know, you know. And she's like, no, you are crazy. I don't believe you. And I think that's sort of what really draws me to this couple is that you know, they love each other, but, you know, they don't always know it. Well, she doesn't always know
it. We have a clip, and I think this is the right time to play it, because it's talking about how
the greatest pickup line in history, is that what it's talking about?
Which one is it?
All right, here we go.
Ciara.
My name is Kendra Saunders.
In this life. And I am, was Carter Hall, but that is not who we are.
What does that mean?
You're Priestess Ciara, I'm Prince Khufu. And we're lovers. Soulmates, we've been partners for 4,000 years. We're drawn to each other in each life, and after we die, we reincarnate to find each other again, and again, and again. And now that I've found you, we should really get
back. Okay, Romeo, why don't you pump the brakes?
These people cannot protect you from Savage any longer.
Do you know who Vandal Savage is?
And every lifetime he hunts us down and kills us. He's done it 206 times, and I'm not planning to make it 207.
I would have used that with John Stamos yesterday if I knew I could do that. I mean, come on.
You got to have a certain amount of confidence to pull off, oh, you're in love with me. You just don't know it yet. But it sounds
like it works. Especially if you've been killed 206 different times.
Yeah. Why is Hawkman so bad at staying alive?
You're terrible at avoiding death.
Carla's character, Sisko, he keeps pointing it out, too. And in, that was one of the things when we were shooting. I always, like, on the first take, I was like, no, she's got a point, right? I mean, I suck. Because I'm sort of like, yeah, like, what am I thinking? And why are you sticking around with me? But I think the thing is, he just really means well. He just really, he still hasn't given up trying. And that's why, you know, that's why I tried these nuances of like, you know, and I'm not trying to make it 207. It might be.
Right. And then, it is going to be, by the way, yeah, I'm sure.
And then partly it's like, we'll see how it goes, and I've totally forgot what I was going to say, so I'm going to leave that. If it comes back, I'll let you know.
This is the voice of actor Falk Henschel here on the Kevin and Bean Show. He, of course, from Hawkman, from DC's Legends of Tomorrow. And you've had a career for about 10 years or so you've been acting.
Yeah.
Tell me how you got this job, because I would imagine this is the type of thing that would be pitched to a lot of actors, and they would think, oh, that sounds like a lot to take on.
It's funny. This was actually fairly simple. I was in Europe visiting my family, who's in Germany, and I made a tape, and that was it.
Flying?
I jumped off my balcony.
Right.
Put down my mattress. Still broke my ankle. No. And that was sort of it. And then I had a conversation with them after I booked it. To be fair, I've had a relationship with casting and producer, like we've seen each other a few times for Arrow and Flash, mm-hmm. and this was just the right thing. And Falk means in German hawk, so Falke.
No kidding.
So I was like, yeah, just, you know, I'm not going to make a tape. It's my name.
Give it to me.
You're born for this
role.
Give it to me. It's my name.
Now, are you running into fans yet who insist on doing their hawk sounds for you?
No, but I...
You're so lucky.
You're about to.
I can't
because
wait.
Our little friend Allie is very excited.
Not, I don't think we
want
to do that.
Very excited. No, I want Falk to hear this.
We don't want the dogs of Los Angeles to hear this, though.
This is her hawk sound that we've had to hear all day long today in anticipation of your arrival, so I think it's only fair that you enjoy it as well.
I love it.
You want to hear my dolphin?
No one loves that.
Yes. That is pretty impressive.
Thank you. Yeah.
That
so
is
when,
really
when
good.
Aquaman comes in, I'll be like, hey, I'm a sea creature. No? I'm going to take another run at that.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
That's not the finish line. You can work on it. You have time.
What's the schedule in terms of your appearances on the current shows, and then how does it transition into Legends of Tomorrow?
Right now we're just doing Legends. We're done with crossovers. But that period, if anyone cares to know, but it was crazy. We were doing 4 episodes at the same time.
Oh, my God.
So and that's running between sets and everything.
Really? Yeah, we were literally picked up and driven somewhere. Sometimes I was like, okay, yeah. I was talking about some scene, and they were like, no, that's the wrong show. That's not what you're doing right now.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was at some point, I took Ian McKellen's acting advice of, somebody tells you where to stand, and somebody tells you what to say. Just do that.
Just do that.
Because I was like, I'm not going to try any more than that.
Just having trouble keeping it straight.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, we have a lot of questions about the DC's Legends tomorrow. It's an unbelievable cast, by the way, and sounds like such a cool show. That premieres January 21st, also on the CW at 8 o'clock that night. Our guest is Falk Henschel. He is here on the Kevin and Bean Show. He is Hawkman. Do it again, Allie.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Actor Falk Henschel from The Legends of Tomorrow, premiering in January on the CW and The Flash and The Arrow. He is Hawkman himself in studio with us here on The Kevin and Bean Show. It's great to have you here. We have to talk dancing for a minute because that came up during the song there. Now, your background, although we now know you as this tough guy, Hawkman, your background is in dance, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. That's how I got.
Professionally.
Yeah. Yeah. I got my way in. My mom was like, look. You seem to not be getting a foot into the acting door. So Patrick Swayze, Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, do that. And she literally put me in dance class, and it sort of led to a backup dance career.
Same with me. That's my life, too. Yeah.
No.
Mariah Carey?
No, not at all. No.
With Mariah Carey at one point?
Yeah.
Britney Spears?
Yeah, videos. That was sort of like in the video backup dancer work.
That's a crazy life.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun, and it's a crazy world. I was like, somebody should make a show about that. It's just stuff that happens in it. It's pretty hilarious.
And you were telling us that there are a lot of people with serious dance skills on the Flash set, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, there was a, like I told you guys in the break, Flash and I had a small little tap off, shuffles. And I got annihilated because tap is something I always wanted to be really good at, and
it's
I'm
hard.
Not at all. I know. The
so
control
hard.
That you need to have.
So and you're saying Hawkman and the Flash had a tap dancing contest.
A tap off sounds cooler.
I know, but I just want to...
Yeah.
I would call it more the Flash just ran all over
I
Hawkman.
See. Okay.
And Hawkman tried to do something about it, but completely failed.
That's hilarious. So one day would you like to... get some sort of a role where you can dance again on film?
Yeah, I mean, to be really honest with you,
like a musical?
Just for my mother, I would like, if they ever do the remake for Dirty Dancing, which they almost did, I was like, I don't care what it's going to be. I don't care if it's going to be good or not. I would love to do that.
You're totally Johnny Castle. I'm putting it out there right now.
Thank you so much.
Done.
Something like that. Other than that, it's hard. I'm like, after Street Dance 2, I was like, this was hard work. I'm now in my 30s. You know,
maybe less of that.
Maybe less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
I haven't. No, I have not. I watched.
Okay.
What have I seen? America's. Sorry. Dancing.
That
one. One of the
top. What was your show? What was your show, Kevin? You loved on MTV.
America's Best Dance Crew.
Crew off. I don't remember. And so you think you can dance too? That's what
I was going for.
Falk, I am fascinated. I mean, you are a guy who is, you know, let's face it, your whole life, I assume, changed in some way last night as we saw you on the CW, and it's going to change even more with the Legends of Tomorrow. But you're a guy who's been working hard and been in a lot of projects over the last 10 years, and you've had some really interesting work. And I'm curious how your first ever job was on Arrested Development, because that sounds like a dream come true.
It's one of our favorite all-time shows.
Yeah, it was. That was, again, I sort of tapped, and I had to sort of sing as well in it, because we were the hot cops. We got hired by Tobias, and it was a whirlwind, because that show I thought was so different to anything else that was on TV at the time.
It was. Genius.
Yeah, but when you're in it, you're like, wait, okay, there's a camera running around, handheld, and not much else. So it was just and being my first job, I was really inexperienced. So it was a whirlwind and yeah.
And you moved to LA to pursue acting, right?
Yes, I did.
Were you here for a long time before you got that job?
About 3 or 4 years, I think.
Was there ever a time where you thought it's not going to happen? I'm going to give up.
Yeah, all the time. Like last night. No, I'm just, that happens all the time. You get up and you
it
just
seems like it would be soul crushing to just go in and audition and it just doesn't happen.
It can be. I think, thankfully, knock on wood, I'm in a better place now, even just mindset about it. To me now, it's meetings and an opportunity to get to play and meet creative people. And it either happens or it doesn't. I have a lot of faith now that I'm like, yeah, I'm going to act. Worst case scenario, equipment is cheap. There's drones. I'll just fly the drone myself, and I'll make a little movie. I run through the woods, and, you know, that's all it is for me, running through the woods, pretending to be somebody and having fun, you know.
Wow, that's such a positive attitude. And
it's not shooting very high, though.
just running through the world.
That's not very high goal.
In my mind, I'm having a sword in my hand, and I, you know, and
that
I'm
helps.
Screaming freedom like Braveheart, or something, something like that.
That's much better. Okay, good.
Forgot to mention that.
Let's talk about DC's Legends of Tomorrow coming out in January, and I mentioned the cast. I mean, my God, Brandon Routh. Victor Garber, Wentworth Miller. I mean, those are just off the top of my head. I mean, it's amazing. Explain the premise of the Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow is a lot of heroes coming together because they have to fight a supreme villain called Vandal Savage. And, yeah, it's all these, I would say, sort of solo superheroes having to unite and travel through time. Rip Hunter picks us up, who is a time master, and he takes us... through time to try to prevent doom from happening.
Now, has Vandal Savage killed all of them 206 times as well?
No, they're much better than I am. No, they just have never had to face him.
Oh, they have never had to.
This is their number one. So,
I got you.
We'll see how they fare.
You're like, I got this.
And they're like, no, you don't.
No, actually, Hawkman.
Hawkman, you sit down.
Sit down, Hawkman.
we'll handle it this time. It seems like it would be an incredibly difficult show to shoot. You usually make these shows in, 8 or 9 days or something like that. Mm-hmm. They're hour-long shows with so much action, and especially with all of these heroes, so much, you know, special effects and stuff that has to be done too. Like, I can't even imagine how much work it is.
Oh, absolutely. A little tidbit too, like the action, of course, but what's really difficult actually is just dialogue scenes with 10 people. You come on the set and there's 10 of us. We all have to be covered. We have to figure out how do we come in and block it so that we can actually just get it done and have everybody say their lines on screen, you know? So sometimes that in itself is a huge challenge.
What happens if Heatwave and Captain Cold are in the same room together?
It's hilarious. I love Dominic. His voice, and he grumbles a lot. You know, like if you watch him in the show as the character, even if he doesn't have a line, you hear. And I love it.
Tell me about Hawkman flying. What's that like for you?
Oh, so cool! Because I came on set and met with the producers, and I was like, "Am I flying on wires or is it all digi-double?" And they're like, "No, you're flying on wires, and you have wire training tomorrow." So I was like,
wire training.
Yes.
Okay.
I was like, yes, I get to actually be in the air. Because I'm such an, you know, actors are nerds. I'm like, I'm pretending that I'm actually flying. I did the Robin Williams, hook flying when he like swims through the air.
Right, sure.
I geeked out, so it was awesome.
I got to do that once, and I'm a lady, and it still hurt where I would have junk. It's painful, right?
Well, yes. You have to really adjust all that beforehand. Yeah. But I think the geeking out is sort of like the adrenaline. It takes over,
it surpasses,
and my area just gets numb because I'm just so
until
so
the
excited.
Day after.
Until the day after.
And you go, like, holy crap, what happened?
Well, Malk, it sounds like you are having the time of your life right now, like really enjoying this opportunity, which is great to hear.
I am. I really am. And I'm really, really grateful for it. Because, like you said, you go through so much stuff. Mm-hmm. Having my family be in Germany and all that, it's like... Is it ever going to be worth it? And then you're just like, oh, thank you even just for those 2 days where you're like, hey, it works out, you know, and it's
right.
Worth it.
So it was a Flash last night, Arrow tonight.
Arrow tonight, yes.
And then your show premieres on the 21st?
21st of January, yes.
And what kind of early reaction are you getting from fans? I know you're active on social media. Are people loving it?
Yeah, so far, really, really positive. I'm really careful with, like, checking too much on it.
Yeah.
Because I saw one response when I got cast. I was like... He's puny. Like, he's not even 240 pounds. And I was like, all right, I'm an actor. I have an eating disorder already. You know, I shouldn't be reading it.
Maybe don't read those.
So far, that said, like, it's been really, really great.
That's awesome. All right. DC's Legends of Tomorrow premieres in January. Look for the Arrow crossover tonight with our new friend, Falk Henschel. So great to meet you, man. Congratulations on all your success, and we appreciate you coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.